Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the AG Council meeting. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Rector Eduardo Gonzalez with the Cathedral Shrine of the Virgin of Guadalupe. Rector Gonzalez, thank you for joining us this morning. I extend my wishes to you and all of the congregation. Would you all please rise for invocation?
Good morning. Lord, shine your face on us, that all the work we are going to perform today be an expression of your love and tenderness for the well-being of everybody, that can impact positively our suits and it could collaborate for the better world. We are asking this in your name. Amen.
Again, Father, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. We've got a number of special recognitions to make this morning. The first one is a special one. It builds on some work that we did in the last year. And for that, I'd like to call up Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. Judy, you ready? Good morning, everyone. It's a great day in Dallas. It's a great day to be a U.S. citizen and a Dallasite. I'm honored to serve as the mayor's chairman of the Trinity River Corridor Project and also as a city councilman for District 3. We're here this morning to talk about the Trinity River Project, specifically the Trinity River Photo Contest. This is the second year in existence for the photo contest. This is an effort, an outreach by our city of Dallas, by your city of Dallas, to reach out to citizens from across the Metroplex. I'm proud to say that we have twice the participation this year than last year. 850 photos were presented, and it was a fantastic response. We were excited about moving forward in the third participation soon. The existing tour of the Trinity Photo Contest started at Methodist Health Center, Methodist Dallas, of course, District 3, like that, no cliff, and traveled to many places across the city. Texas Scottish Rite Hospital, Maddie Nash, a rec center, Jeanette Kennedy Gallery, Texas Discovery out at Fair Park, and it's currently at the African American Museum being toured. We estimate thousands of citizens have viewed these photos from across Metroplex. The contest that we're going to enjoy this morning was started in June of 2010, this year, and wrapped up October 15th. As I mentioned, over 850 photos were presented and participated. There were three categories, professional, amateur, and youth. And then within those three categories, you had four different areas, architectural structure, forest prairie, river ponds, and wildlife. The Dallas Camera Club, along with city staff, and Canon participated in a Canon photography workshop in July at the Audubon Center, and we had 85 participants. What a great outreach for Canon. We thank them very much for their participation. Again, the Trinity Project absolutely is all about flood protection. It's about parks and recreation. It's about transportation and our infrastructure and economic development, but really about bringing people together. And this photo contest, once again, has been very successful at bringing people together. The judging occurred just recently with a panel of five distinguished professional photographers identifying first, second, third place. And now we're going to view a video. Benny, we're about ready. We're going to view a video and look at some of the entries and our winners. So please.
Something about summoning and everything. we have to think about, you know, because sometimes this accident of somebody shot the really great showers and lighting and everything, then actually it's almost like they had a little train or something.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. Like this train.
Yeah, this star. Yeah, I was looking at the star pretty nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the car's gonna look a little bit, you know, a little bit of technique. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. The very start, when I first look at it, it is an emotional or visual reaction. If the photo is successful on a lot of different levels, you're going to feel something when you see it.
Most of the time I look at compositions, the subject that they selected, and also what's unique about it, because typically the subject matter is the same. The photographer could select an angle, or color, or shape, and the lens that the photographer used in order to make it interesting.
This is my favorite.
Yeah,
without a doubt, that. Okay, y'all have one, right? Anybody disagree?
Is it helpful to say, well, there were six posies on that one?
Yeah. Next time maybe I won't say
because
it's
like,
not the one that had anything on it.
Yeah, I think that one is a keeper.
What I like about this one better than these is someone took something that's really not beautiful
and
normally wouldn't even be photographed, and just the technique that they used to photograph it really sharp with really crisp light, mm-hmm. and they made a really nice print.
Well, this is a very special contest because actually, I'm able to see Dallas in a completely different way. Photographers go to the Trinity Corridor and photograph things that are just amazing. I mean, we have photographs of wolves. I even questioned if that really happened. But it's amazing some of the images that came out of seeing your city the way you don't typically see it.
Well, this year we had quite a bit more entries, almost three times the entries of last year. Last year we had about 350, this year we had about 850. So the participation is really going up. We had a lot more pictures, but we also had a lot more really good pictures. So it was more difficult to judge this year because there were a lot of strong contenders. The contest is special because the pictures take us as viewers into the Trinity River Corridor in ways that you can't see with your eye.
It's a real pleasure seeing all the different facets that go into the project, from architecture to nature to the different animal categories that are here. It's been a real pleasure to see the different visions that people bring to the contest. It's really a unique way to see what's going to become the future of the area here.
There are so many great amateur and pro photographers, and it was a hard judge tonight, but we saw so many great angles and views of just different seeing of the Trinity River.
Thank you. very professional. Sean Fitzgerald, Robert McFessel, Charlie Vargas, Pearson, Jacob, Michael Blackwell, and Kevin O'Regan. Round of applause for our professional photographers. And last but not least, but the grand prize winner of this year's second annual Trinity River Corridor Project Photo Contest goes to Sean Fitzgerald of the Wolves.
Buses arrived on the SMU campus filled with students from all over Dallas who were excited to get their first look at college life. Not even the rain could dampen their spirits.
Basically, we're here to show our students how important getting an education really is, and not only how important an education is, but how much fun it can be to come out and to celebrate, you know, the true Texas tradition of what football is, and to show them that, you know, sports isn't everything, but it can be a lot.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 2010 homecoming for the SMU Mustangs. It's a great day on the hilltop for football, but the SMU Mustangs face off against the Houston Cougars. Go Mustangs!
As excited as the students were about the game, they were also making plans for their future.
Why y'all come out here today?
Because we're college bound and we want to come see a local football team play.
Who are y'all going to be for today?
Mustang!
Yeah!
When I think about college, I think of getting a degree. Yes, I think about getting my career, being an actress.
Armed with plenty of teen spirit, goodie bags, and tickets for nachos and hot dogs, the students headed to the stands to take in the atmosphere.
And so we instill in them at a very young age how important education is and how important college is. And so to actually bring them to a campus, which some of them might be the first ones in their generation to ever go, but to just give them a small glimpse of what it looks like and what it feels like and what this can be and what this can do for your future, I think it's phenomenal. They're in such amazement at, oh my God, is this really college?
Thank you. share in between as well as getting a great education. Brad, the Southern Methodist Buffalo Gate goes to sponsor over 250 buses throughout the season at five home games, will result in 12,500 students attending games in that season. Brad, this program has contributed to the quality of life of the Dallas youth and also changed economic education and social of these youth and living through mentorship engagement in the college process. Now, therefore, I can now ask on behalf of the Dallas City Council, Mayor Tony Lester, and the City of Dallas. Do hereby send a special recognition to the Southern Methodist University Mustang Club and Buffalo Gate.
Thank you. Mayor Lester, Dallas City Council members, all of us, I'd like to thank you on behalf of everyone that has been here, Dr. Michael.
Councilman, I owe you a debt of gratitude. You come out there and took care of my kids. That's big time. I appreciate that. One of the things that you did, you had Stilts Road Elementary out there. Stilts Road Elementary. That is the 78% of the kids go there economically disadvantaged. But that school is the National Title I Award. There's two schools in the state of Texas that represent Texas and all states. Only two schools out of every state win the National Title I Award. Stilts Road is one of them. And again, you took my kids, and they got busy out there. And so, mail number one, thank you for taking care of the kids. Gentlemen, SMU. You guys stood up to play. You called it. You took them to these kids and hopes and dreams you've given them. So I guarantee you, my kids are going to be back here again next time. And I'm going to be glad to see you guys. Now, at one time, when you got SMU, were you just one of the fastest human beings on earth?
Seriously.
Yes, he was.
That's exactly right. He doesn't talk about it, but he was. Well, tell us real quick, Nell. I want to hear it. Just tell me what you were.
That was football.
That's what I'm saying.
120 yard high jump.
How about that? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Atkins, I too want to thank you for highlighting SMU and education this morning. Congratulations on your SMU degree. I too am an SMU graduate, but at the graduate level, it is much more applaudable to be an SMU graduate at the undergraduate level because it takes much more to be there. And Ms. Atkins, very, very proud of your personal accomplishment and the way that you have remained involved in SMU and in education. Education is truly, truly the engine of elevation societally and economically. The poorest children anywhere in the world with an education can be the richest leaders, the strongest leaders, the most courageous people in society. I speak from personal experience. Because a child is economically disadvantaged does not mean that the child is intellectually disadvantaged. SMU and other educational institutions take those children and make them the brightest and the best and allow them to achieve their true potential. SMU, thank you. The Jazz and the Doom, thank you for highlighting one of the most important things in life for us as a society and certainly for the children who are listening and can see and say, I too can do that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you also, Mayor, for the way you do work with our kids. Very important. And I'd like to thank SMU for opening the doors to our school system. I've been an advocate for our kids in school before getting graduated. And this is a great way we as a city can help to move them forward. And we need more things like that. Thank you guys so much for working with us. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I also want to thank you, Chanel, for staying involved. I am an SMU undergraduate degree holder, and so thank you, gentlemen from SMU, for working with Chanel so that we can get this information to our children. I worked on those kids in Oak Cliff that had it not been for an outreach officer who came to my house and talked to my parents about why I should go to SMU, I would not have graduated from SMU. So the outreach effort is very important. I'm living proof of that, and I want to continue that. I hope we can continue this program for the president.
Thank you. Thank you very much. To Stephen Dean, I think for an offer, SMU is looking to continue the way to reach out to special education for all of the education. And then, for the important part of our
Let me say, Nevin, before you go, and one most deserving of this recognition, I'd like to thank Councilwoman Hill for choosing to recognize you for your service and your commitment. And it starts from deep within, and it's deep within of a real person that shows the caring for all of our citizens. It extends well beyond District 5. When Nevin is on the fourth floor, the telephone rings when she was there. Where she is even now. And it's a senior citizen or a citizen from all parts of Dallas. And it's just that voice on the other end of the telephone that Nevin responds to. And Nevin, your heart continues to pour out, and we love you. Now, those are the good things. I do want to say that Nevin has always hit me in the stomach with the elbows, does everything. So this is the real Nevin I'm talking about now. But it's from love that we share these things, because she believes in discipline and keeping things in order and getting things done. And we, the city of Dallas, and each and every employee here, I know that I can speak on behalf of, to say, Nevin, we love you. You're just completely out of your mind at times, but your heart makes up for all of those great things. And I'm telling you, when you have a person that you love and that can be themselves, and we can accept that person for who they are, and then they continue to accomplish and love and look after all of the citizens from the bottom of your heart. I just want to say hats off to you. Thank you, Ms. Hill, for the recognition, but thank you, Melvin, for your service and your love for the city of Dallas and the entire community.
Thank you.
So, thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Ms. Hill, for bringing Ms. Murphy forward. And I want to thank you, Ms. Murphy, for making Dallas one of the best cities in the world to live in. It's because of people like you and the love of the city and the people who make that so great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, many people, and I want to first say thanks to my council member, Ms. Pearson, recognizing you. But a lot of people don't know, we had a couple of years ago the Tour of Homes on South Boulevard. She designed a kitchen that was out of this world. You also, she don't talk about this, she's an interior designer as well. She can take a house and make it look absolutely wonderful. So I just want to say thank you for all your hard work.
The stores that they have, the three stores they have, are in District 1 and District 5. So when
finishes, I'm going to have Ms. Hill and Ms. Hassel come up for a picture with them. Whereas it is an honor to recognize Midway Auto Supply as a family business based in Oak Cliff and in the city of Dallas for their positive impact to the community and economic development. And whereas Midway Auto Supply Inc. is a privately owned business composed of the Levine family and is celebrating their 50th year business, having operated successfully since 1960. Guys, that's when I was born. I wasn't part of the 60s group. Okay. Whereas they currently operate in multiple markets via several online venues as well as three retail established in the city of Dallas. Whereas Midway Auto Supply features several product categories, which include, here's the advertising, automotive aftermarket parts, accessories, consumer electronics, computer technology, video gaming, office supplies, home and garden, camping and hunting gear, kitchen and household tools, hardware, and much, much more. Whereas the first Midway Auto Supply opened at 1101 South Hampton Road in Oak Cliff by Fanny and Henry Levine in June 1960, followed by a second location in 1964 at 4719 South Lancaster Road, and finally the third at 309 East Jefferson in 1972. And whereas, after Henry Levine's passing, their oldest son Martin stepped up to manage the store and continue the family-owned business still today through second and third generation family members. My daughter sometimes says, I may not get in family business. Second, third generation family members and outstanding managers leading the operations. Whereas with other store managers, Martin, Larry Levine lead the original Hampton store. Steve Levine, his sister, operates the Lancaster store. Herb Levine runs the store in Jefferson, and their active e-commerce business is headed by Helen Levine Marston. And whereas Midway Auto Supply epitomizes the vitality of small businesses within Dallas and across our country as the backbone of our economy. Whereas Midway Auto Supply family is proud to serve Oak Cliff and the greater Dallas community for years to come. Now, therefore, I, David A. Newman, on behalf of Mayor Tom Leffert and the Dallas City Council, hereby give this special recognition to Midway Auto Supply and the Levine family for 50 years of outstanding customer service and their commitment to Oak Cliff and the greater city of Dallas community. Join me with a round of applause.
Thank you very much. Let me ask first for the Vice Chair of Public Safety, Cecilia Hossel, if you kindly join me at the podium. Thank you, Ms. Hossel. And then if I could ask the members of the Public Safety Committee, those who are present, if you please come up and join me here at the podium.
Yes, we are. We got some of this.
Public Safety Committee. Then if I could ask for our distinguished
Ryan, if you could come, and Mary, if you could come. Yep. There you go. Now, if I could get Keith and all of my Keith Potato and all of the other officers in uniform to come in with this, with exception. Chief Perez, your cup, Tim Perez, your cup as well. Yeah. Let me say this and set the tone. We have the very best police department in the United States of America. That's number one. And when it comes to the commitment of our men and women, it is there regardless of the circumstances, for the time, but when it comes to keeping our citizens of the city safe, all of our officers are there on point without notice. If I could ask Officer William Schubert to come. Stumpert, you don't still have the correct pronunciation to get here. Okay, let him come. Then if I could ask for our distinguished mayor to come. Hello, mayor. You got to stand on the other side of this guy. And then Ms. Margolin, Ms. Madrano, Ms. Salazar, Ms. Hill, Ms. Hunt, if you all would come. Yeah. There you go. Y'all come. And this is something that is just very, very serious. I'm gonna read this, and as I read it, it will tell the story of what has taken place, and I kind of titled it Burning Talk. Whereas on October 27, 2010, while on patrol, Officer William Schuffer, badge number 9144, was driving northbound on the Dallas North Tollway, and upon nearing the George Bush Turnpike, he observed a four-door sedan collided into the rear of a stalled older model Cadillac. And whereas, upon impact, the Cadillac began to spin around, only to strike the concrete walls beneath and began to burst into flames. Whereas the officer immediately stopped to help the involved motorist and was advised that everyone was out of their vehicles. However, the driver of the Cadillac was unconscious and trapped inside the car. And whereas Officer Schumpert, without any tools and only seconds to react, used the palm of his hand to shatter the Cadillac's driver window. And even though the door was jammed, he was able to force open and grab the unconscious man. And whereas Officer Schumpert pulled the man from the burning car and placed him in the patrol car to protect him from rush hour traffic and further injury. Whereas Officer Schumpert requested assistance to close down the roadway while awaiting on additional officers and the Dallas Fire Rescue. And whereas the injured man was transported to Parkland Hospital with lacerations to his forehead and bleeding profusely, and was listed in stable condition. And whereas Officer Schumpert, his disregard for his own safety, and placed him into risk to rescue Mr. Mackey, the driver of the Cadillac. And whereas Officer William Schumpert's historic action exemplifies courage and the unsung act of sacrifice that the Dallas police officers make every single day in our city. And whereas the city of Dallas wishes to congratulate Officer William Schumpert as we join him in celebrating this well-deserved recognition. Therefore, the Dallas Police Department is the backbone of our city. I am honored to take part in this celebration honoring one of Dallas's finest. Therefore, Mayor Tom Leffler, myself, Mayor Pro Tem of the City of Dallas, Sheriff Public Station, Public Safety Committee, and each and every one of the Dallas City Council members and your two bosses, we do hereby extend special recognition on this day, Wednesday, November 17, 2000, to Officer Julius Stompard, badge number 9144.
Not be here on December 1st, but I did want to recognize the fact that December 1st is marked internationally by the United Nations UN AIDS Council as World AIDS Day, with special events commemorating the day throughout the world and in the city of Dallas. Human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, is a virus that eventually leads to acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, which destroys the body's ability to fight infection. HIV/AIDS is a disease that affects men, women, and even children, and does not discriminate based on race, age, religion, or sexual orientation. The HIV/AIDS epidemic continues to dramatically impact the health and lives of thousands of our citizens, as well as the health status and economic well-being of our citizens. Although there is no cure for HIV/AIDS, there are preventative measures that can be taken. And in today's global climate, it is imperative to warn everyone of the dangers of HIV/AIDS and inform the public of causes, symptoms, prevention, treatment, and about root causes, and promote other aspects of living healthy lives. With over 20 million people having died from AIDS in roughly 15 years, the Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS has made it a priority to lead and advocate AIDS awareness and education by strategically planning response. UNAIDS has established numerous partnerships with leading local and national organizations aimed at increasing participation within the community concerning AIDS awareness and prevention by involving groups in the private sector, faith-based organizations, and those living with AIDS. UNAIDS has partnered with North Texas HIV Service Provider Council, Incorporated, an organization whose emphasis is on providing access to health care and expanding local and national partnerships with other groups. It also provides volunteer opportunities, showing that involvement in AIDS awareness is possible for those at every level of society. So today I commend the efforts of the campaign Stop AIDS, Act Aware, and hope your message of safety and healthy lifestyle will save many lives. Therefore, I, Delia Hasso, on behalf of the mayor of the city of Dallas and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim December 1st, 2010, as World AIDS Day. We have several of our service providers in the city of Dallas with us today. And I also want to recognize my colleague, Councilwoman
good days and some of the first, and I want to send that. We were also, and I want to thank my colleague, Jay Hunter, for this important recognition. I support any organization that's working with AIDS awareness and prevention here in our city and around the country. And we are doing a show today, the South Dallas AIDS Walk, which will be March 19th of 2011. It's a pre-walk event where we are recognizing individuals with AIDS in that community, and we're recognizing prevention as well. So, Delia, I support you on this, and I want to thank you for this worthwhile recognition. And also, St. Luke, our church, we do a lot of education and prevention, and I want to thank our pastor, Pastor Gordon, who continues to talk about this daily community at the Loop, St. Luke, here in Dallas. And I want to just thank you.
Councilmember Davis, I also want to recognize Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Fairway does a huge amount of work on this. He does a hip hop event every day, every year. So I want to thank you and recognize you. So, this is Noble and provider, service provider. Thank you.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. Well, I don't want to interrupt the pictures there. I'm very pleased to be the recipient of a challenge from none other than our Benny Jones, who handles all our AV expertise. You know, of course, council members, that Councilman Benny Jones is a councilman for the city of Wiley, and it's very unfortunate that this Friday night, the Wiley Pirates are playing the Kimball High School Knights. And it's unfortunate because Benny and I, Councilman Jones and I, placed a friendly wager, and I have every bit of confidence that the Kimball High School Knights are going to clean their clock. We're playing at Stanridge Stadium in Carrollton, 7:30 on Friday, and I just wanted to publicly announce that and hopefully in next week publicly humiliate Benny. But the wager is the loser has to bring the team over in the other city to eat. So we're gonna bring you to Oak Cliff, and we're gonna feed you some good cooking and give you the bill. So, but again, I'm very confident of our Kimball High School Knights cleaning their clock.
I just noticed your picture went fuzzy.
Oh, I bet you did. He tuned me out. So, and the good thing about this, Mayor, is we control the mic. He can turn us off, but he can't speak here. So, anyway, we, in all seriousness, council members and Mayor, Benny, you do a fabulous job for us here. You make sure the lights go on. You make sure that we present ourselves to our constituents, to walk through the city. And thank you very much. His mother lives in my district also, so she'll be cheering for the Kimball Knights, of course. But anyway, it's a pleasure to work with you, and it's an honor that I serve with you, whether it be Wiley or the city of Dallas. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor. Pardon. Go Knights. Absolutely.
That picture, you're up.
We have a few speakers this morning signed up to speak, starting first with Darren Reed and Otis Fagan. That's the only two that we have this morning, Mr. Mayor. And while Mr. Reed here? Is Mr. Fagan here? Mr. Fagan is here. While Mr. Fagan is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending the city council meeting shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and misconduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council or while attending the city council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant in arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. Mr. Fagan, you have 3 minutes. You will see an amber 30-second flash and then a red light flash. Stop. You will take your name and your address for the record.
Thank you. My name is Otis Fagan. I live at 2247 Scotland Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75216 with code. My telephone number is 214-374-1482. This morning, I hope it will be the final time I am coming before you. I have reached a point in my search for a reason for the home invasion and robbery that took place at my residence last year. Last year, I gave the city council, all 14 of you, a copy of the court order C for the West Dallas lawsuit that you all had filed. Now, one of you gave a copy of the attorney to the attorney general, and your officers and the state investigators did the home invasion and robbery with a search warrant that was based on a lie to gain access to the database that I produced in 1998. Your intent was to scoop up all copies of the database, the court orders, with Appendix B, and put them in storage where they are now. No charges were filed against me, but all of my computers, office equipment, files, and database is presently in storage. That was because the implementation of Appendix B was never done by the City of Dallas Health Care Program for the people of West Dallas, and the attempt by Parkland Hospital with the state grant using my database as a core document was not as successful as they had hoped and was unable to attract more than 2,500 of the residents of West Dallas to the program that was listed on the database. The court order was for all the residents of West Dallas that lived a half mile around the plant, not 2,500. There was an actual count of 17,000 individuals who was entitled to the health care program that was supposed to be provided by the City of Dallas. Now, we gave you copies of Appendix B to get your attention, because in Appendix B and C was the court-ordered requirements that the city failed to provide. Appendix B had specific steps for the City of Dallas to take in order to get the help to the residents of West Dallas that they needed to prevent the deaths of so many people. But they died anyway. They died because you did not follow the court order for the years that they came before you and requested help. You refused to listen to the residents' cry for help when they came to you year after year. They came to you time and time again because they knew what was in the court order. They had copies of them. They had copies of the joint motion for the entry of agreed upon order and the set of evidentiary hearings that was agreed upon by all parties. The city attorney was included in the negotiation that led up to that proposal. And they all agreed to comply with it fully. Fully means all 17,000 individuals, not 250 or 2,500. To this day, you have not complied with the court order. We met with the attorney, Tom Perkins, and he assured us that the city had done all that was required.
We appreciate you. First item on the agenda is approval of minutes by October 20th. Would have been trivial to have. Do you have a motion on that? Move in. Second, all those here signify by saying aye. And a secretary, if you could, the board and commission, please.
The appointments of board and commission, Mr. Mayor, we have several full council appointments. Civil Service Board, Ed Hickson, being nominated by Councilmember Newman, and the Reinvestment Zone 5 and 11 Board, Council.
Also nominee for council members Tanel Atkins and Steve Salazar as being for official city business, sir.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to order amendment secretary 4?
Item 4 requires 2 seconds. Mr. Mayor, it's authorized the modification, assumption, and extension agreement with Citywide Community Development Corporation to number 1, modify the 2 prior Chapter 380 agreements and related real estate lien notes, deeds and trust and deed restrictions that have been executed between the City of Dallas, CWCDC, for the development of the Lancaster Corridor, to A, realign the total funding amount of $3,850,000 that has been advanced to CWCDC with the separate projects comprising the Lancaster Corridor development, B, provide for the release of the city liens on the Lancaster Corridor properties upon start of the construction, and C, extend the demolition and construction commencement dates to a date, to dates 12 months after the date of execution for the modified loan documents. 2, assign the loan documents to Catalyst, with Catalyst expressing, assuming and agreeing to pay and to perform all obligations detailed in the loan document. And 3, authorize the Director of the Office of Economic Development to execute such other instruments, including subordination, as necessary to accommodate the financing structure for this project.
Moved and seconded by Ms. Medrano and Mr. Salazar.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to order, Madam Secretary, 5?
And 5 is a public hearing to receive comments on an amended City of Dallas proposal to submit an application to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for the Community Development Block Grant Section 108 Guaranteed Loan Program loan to the amount of $8,492,000 for a loan for the Lancaster Urban Village Commercial LLC to develop the Lancaster Urban Village Project, including land acquisition at the southwest quadrant of the intersection of South Lancaster Road and Ann Arbor Avenue, site work, commercial development, and development of a parking garage for a mixed-use transit-oriented development along with the South Lancaster Road corridor crossing the Veterans Affairs Medical Center, and for a loan interest reserve. And at the close of the public hearing, authorize number one, submission of an application to HUD for a CDBG Section 108 guaranteed loan program loan for Lancaster Urban Village Commercial LLC in an amount not to exceed $8,492,000, and two, the city manager to submit the application and take necessary action in connection with the application submission. At this time, is there anyone that would like to speak on this item? Is there anyone that would like to speak on this item? Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Motion, please.
Mr. Mayor, I move that the public hearing be closed and that this item be approved by the Dallas City Council.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. We have two briefings on the agenda for this morning, one in regard to the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport MWBE program, and then on the sales tax overview. We'll go until about 11:25 or so, and then we're going to break for a lunch. There are a number of items on the executive session, so I anticipate going through the DFW MWBE. Hopefully we can try to get that done in the space of an hour. Then we'll come back and probably have the executive session and finish that other item. So with that, let me turn then to Jeff Fagan, who's the CEO of the DFW Airport. Jeff, first of all, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, good morning, Mayor, members of the council. It's my pleasure to be here today to give you all a briefing of the 2010 results of our MWBE program at DFW Airport. I'd like to recognize Bernice Washington. Bernice J. Washington is here today. She is a member of our board representing Dallas, but also the chairman of the Finance Committee. And Bernice, thank you very much for being here today. We also have two of our executive vice presidents, Linda Valdez-Thompson and Phil Ritter, who's also with us today. What I'd like to do, well, first of all, let me just say our MWBE program has been a huge success over the years. We have a tremendous track record in this area, but it's more than just a track record. It really is part of our culture at DFW Airport and our commitment, and that commitment is something that extends from the board of directors to our senior management throughout the entire organization. So what I'd like to do today is just to walk through a little bit of some of the things that we do from a strategy standpoint, some of the results of our contracting and concessions programs over the last year, as well as some future opportunities. And we have been recognized by the community on a variety of different things, but I want to point to that as well. First, just from a strategy standpoint, we feel that we contribute greatly to the economy of North Texas, but we also recognize that the MWBE program also contributes greatly to North Texas. Recently completed a study with the University of North Texas to look at what the economic impact of our MWBE program is, and it's measured about $1.2 billion a year, about 14,000 jobs, and over about $170 million a year in property taxes that are generated from businesses that participate in our MWBE program. Our role really is to try to facilitate and to maximize business opportunities at DFW Airport, build capacity where we have opportunities to do that for small, minority, and women-owned businesses, and we have a number of different programs. Our MWBE program is our largest program. About 90% of our funds are spent in non-federal or non-federally funded, and they basically fall within our MWBE program. The remaining 10% actually is federal funds, and that is actually governed by the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program as articulated by the FAA. And now we also have another program called the Airport Concession Disadvantage Enterprise, the ACDVE program, which governs how concessions are accounted for in terms of minority participation. All of this is done in accordance with the U.S. Department of Transportation, Part 23 and Part 26. And I'm sure you all are familiar with this, as the same applies to Love Field as well. The results of 2010, and this is actual dollars spent, and this is from October to October, our fiscal year, is about 29.4% of all of our contracting areas actually were achieved by MWBs or minority participation. Again, you can see the ethnic breakdown on the side of the slide. And again, a very, very powerful, over $80 million went to MWB firms last year as a result of activities at DFW Airport. So we're very, very pleased with that number, and it's one that it's been a consistent number of performance. As we looked at our goals, we had a 30% construction goal. We actually achieved 33.6. Professional service, 27% goal. We achieved 34.5. Goods and services at 25%, we achieved 30.4. And while we don't have a specific goal for contracts and purchase orders under 50,000, we actually achieved about 20.8% in this area. So, again, this is, I think, a reflection of the commitment of the airport. Our goals are aggressive, but the performance has also been very, very, very good. And also just want to point to the concession program, our current concession program. About 59% of the sales dollars in our concession program are actually achieved by minority women business enterprises at DFW Airport. And again, the breakout by ethnic groups is identified, but this is also a very, very strong level performance. We're not sure that we can find too many other airports out there where that type of performance has taken place. As we look to the future, we do have some opportunities, two major opportunities. One is with our terminal renewal and improvement program. That will result in approximately $1.75 billion worth of investment in DFW Airport in the renewal and refurbishment of our four legacy terminals, terminals A, B, C, and E. And again, we are anticipating significant MWB participation off of that. And obviously, when we go through this process of refurbishing these terminals, we will also be redoing our concession program. And right now, we have an RFP out on the street that is actually due now on December 17th. We do expect to have significant minority participation in the concession program as well. We have extensive outreach programs. We've held a number of different programs for both the concession as well as the construction. We had one yesterday, for example, on some civil design work. We had 44 companies that came in and met with eight different primes, and there was basically a speed dating activity where everybody had an opportunity to meet all the various parties who may be proposing on some upcoming civil design work. So that's just one example of the many types of outreaches that we do at DFW Airport, and again, it goes right to the heart of our commitment to this program. Finally, I just want to point out that we have received quite a bit of recognition and awards from various organizations in the community. We're very pleased and proud to be recognized by our business partners. That recognition is very, very important to us. And again, I think every one of these groups, including the Federal Aviation Administration, has basically touted our program and has appreciated the work that we've done in this area. In summary, again, this has been a huge commitment for DFW Airport over the years. It's fully integrated into everything we do, and we have an established and a successful track record at the airport. We recognize that this is an area that there's always opportunities to do more and do better, and you have my commitment and the commitment of the airport to do that. And that's summarizes my presentation and the results of 2010, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that anybody has on our program. I also have some folks here. If it gets into some details that I don't have available to me, they may be able to help me as well. But anyhow, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Salazar, do you want to begin?
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Fagan, thanks for coming down today. I appreciate it. As many people are or may not be aware, the airport is actually owned by two cities, Dallas and Fort Worth.
That's correct.
And we do have an independent board of which the mayor serves as a member, a voting member, and we do have appointees on that board. In the past, we've asked for some information on MWBE, and I'm very happy to see the numbers are there for MWBE. My question is that we go through MWBE reports very frequently here. They're all on our contracts and all of our information we receive. Example, on page 4, you have all categories of MWBE. However, it doesn't break it down into local and non-local. I don't know, is that something that you have available, or would you have to come back to us on that?
I would probably have to come back to you on that. I don't know what that number is. I would certainly think the majority of our business is done with companies that are in the region. There's no question about that.
Well, you know, if, for example, someone coming in from Atlanta, Georgia, would not be considered a local to come into Dallas to get a contract, or if they're coming from New York or California, I'd consider them a non-local. You know, obviously, because of our economy, we want to make sure that our companies who are here have all the opportunity to compete and to be able to gain contracts to sustain not only their businesses, but also locally their businesses. As we know, many of them outside of airports have other businesses. So I'd like to know what the local and non-local on the all categories on page 4 is. On page 5, you categorize as the overall, I guess, construction professional services. Again, the reports that normally we have at the city, we have a breakdown of, just like you did in the prior page where you have African-American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American, white female, and other. On page 5, we do not have that breakdown. Is there a breakdown on that? Because this covers not just concessions, but actually construction, professional services, goods and services, contracts, and orders under 50,000.
We do have that information, Councilman. I'd be more than happy to provide that to all of the members of the council. I don't have a slide for it that I can shoot up on the wall, but I do have the information. That information is readily available. We actually do monthly reports on our MWB participation in a great amount of detail. We actually put them on CDs and provide them to all of our board members. I'd be more than happy to provide those.
Okay, well, that would help me to analyze how we're doing as far as or locally we're able to contract our minority vendors successfully. Is there an imbalance where we have non-local vendors that are being able to outbid our local vendors, and that way we can address programs to help our local vendors be more successful in future contracts and especially in future expansions? So I would certainly like to see that. And, you know, and also by breaking down the categories, that also helps us if say we have in professional services more of one group that's able to successfully get contracts, but an entire group that might represent 48% of the community is excluded, then certainly that's very important to me and certainly to the council members to have that information in front of them to be able to assist you in addressing those issues. So if I can get that information, I'd appreciate it. That's all I have for now, Mayor. I appreciate that. We have the director here. He should have that information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Jeff, you know, I guess you kind of explained the information with Steve. It was my question on page 5. you know, how do you break that down? I mean, I remember last time when we had a briefing about MWBE, you know, we waited a year before we came forward to this briefing, and we've been waiting a year to do this briefing. And I guess, Jeff, you know, my concern is, the same thing Steve is, you know, and I appreciate Bernice Washington to point us to the website, but I felt sure that we should have had those broken down. But when we do our MWBE, it's very important what is, how it's broken down through the construction, how many Hispanics, African Americans, what else is professional service. Even though you meet your goal, we still need to know what the breakdown is, especially with a briefing like this. And I think that's what we asked for, you know, before, at the last briefing. And you didn't do the briefing. I think Donald was one who did the briefing, the minority. Could you tell me, have there been an increase since the last couple of years in the minority participation in those different categories versus this number is 2010? Did we increase, did we decrease, whatever, in 2008, when we had the last briefing?
Mr. Atkins, Councilman, I'm not sure I can answer that question precisely. I would say that our numbers have been relatively consistent over the years. We have made some efforts in certain areas, such as construction in the African-American category, and the African-American companies have done much better over the years. But I'd have to go back and do that analysis, and it's a pretty straightforward analysis. We can do it very quickly.
Well, that's what I would like. I would like to see an analysis just from 2007 through to 2010 in different categories. See, are we increasing in what department, you know, in construction or professional service, you know, goods and service, so on. So that give us some kind of guidelines. Are we looking at, and would those be broken down by non-local and local?
We would have to do some research on the local versus non-local. I mean, the majority of the work that's being done out of DFWers is by companies that are located in North Texas. Certainly, we do have some out-of-town companies that do work at DFW Airport. Some of the work that is being bid out by state law, we cannot basically discriminate against an out-of-town company because of state law. There's also, I think, in the concession rules and regulations as far as the ACDBE, there's also no provision for local participation as we have had in the past. So there has been some changes in some of the law, but by and large, you'll see that the majority of the work being done is being done by local companies. But we can actually break that down.
Okay, so a good example, you know, we're talking about concession and construction. Could you tell me what have you forecast this year in your percentage of construction, concession? What is that dollars for new construction at DFW? Is there what number and what percentage is broken down?
Yeah, the 1.75 is a number that will be extended over the next really 6 years. So we actually will start sometime at this spring after the Super Bowl. So I suspect it'll be in the $200 to $300 million range, in terms of actual construction dollars. To date, we've actually spent about $37 million on what we call enabling projects that we can do now before we actually start into the big construction. And just on that $37 million, about 38% of those dollars went to MWBE firms. When I look at our design and design and construction folks, we have design and design management. We have two primes. They are, in the 40% MWBE range. The other one is 42%. Our construction management at risk. They right now have a goal of 40%, and Manhattan Burn, another joint venture, is at 40% as well. So. So far, everything that we're seeing in terms of the construction is very positive, in the high 30s, low 40s, and very, very strong commitment from our design as well as our construction management firm.
And I guess last question. I would like to see you get back with me versus your prime contractors, who was a minority of the plan. Have there been a reverse, you know, some of the minorities who was not who were part of the prime team, have they been moved up to the prime in the last 7 years? So yes. You probably don't have that, but I would like to see.
Yeah, there's a number of examples of that, and I'd be more than happy to provide that. Most of the design and design management firms, as well as the construction management firms, have come in as joint ventures, and all of those joint ventures have, you know, major participation from minority firms.
Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I have a couple of questions. Who oversees your MWBE program?
Right now, there is the vice president of our business and diversity and development department is Don O'Bannon. He reports to Linda Valdez-Thompson, who is our executive vice president for administration and diversity.
Okay. Have he been here to meet with us? Do we just ask to talk to him?
I'll make him available. He's currently not available right now.
Okay. I'd like to get his name and number, please. The other thing, is the meeting open to the public, your board meetings? Are they open to the public?
Yeah, absolutely. All of our meetings are open to the public, yes.
Okay. When do you have your meetings?
First Tuesday of the month, or actually first Thursday of the month is the board meeting. The Tuesday before the board meeting is actually our committee meetings, and they go on Thursday from 8:30 typically to about 11 o'clock, and then the committee meetings are pretty much all afternoon.
Can you send me those meetings, the first Thursday and the Tuesday committee meetings? Now, you talk about on page 3, you talk about the 3 breakdowns here. You got the MWBE, the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, and the Air Concession Disadvantaged Enterprise. Of that, which of those two, what is the new change? And I keep hearing you talking about the new changes with the federal government. What are some of those new changes with the federal government?
Well, the big change is with the Airport Concessions Disadvantaged Enterprise Program. The ACDBE regulations are relatively new. They're probably 2 years old now.
Uh-huh.
And that is a change that took place as far as federal regulations. It does dictate how you count for MWBE or ACDBE participation. It also defines what an ACDBE firm actually is. There are some limitations on things like net worth and things along those lines to qualify for that designation.
Did the federal government see a need to change this, or was it done on a lobbyist, through a lobbyist group?
I think the federal government has been working on that with industry for a number of years, mm-hmm. and I think what the primary intent, I believe, of the legislation was to ensure active participation by minority and women business enterprise firms and concession enterprises. So much of the regulations dictate the active participation and active investment by the MWB firms.
Now, which percentage for the DBE and which percentage for the ACDBE? What was the percentage that the federal government said you had to do business with? Out of the 100% of the pie, how much was each awarded?
I don't believe the federal government has a goal as it relates to the ACDBE. Typically, they do have DBE goals for federally funded construction contracts,
mm-hmm.
and that's typically between 5% and 10%.
Now, on the other two, the DBE and the ACD, there is no set goal for percentage.
Again, the DBE on federally funded construction contracts, they typically have a goal, which is typically between 5% and 10%.
Uh-huh.
On the ACDBE, I don't believe that the federal government outlines a goal that's typically, it's really a regulation to define what is an ACDBE firm and what are the qualities or characteristics for consideration of participation.
Who defines that when you talk about the word define on the last one, ACDBE, who defines that?
That's in the federal regulation.
It's in the federal regulation. So there is some definition on what you can give
yes.
for percentage-wise. Okay.
Well,
now, on the MWBE, that's a local funding contract, and that's something that the board defines?
Yes, and that is pretty much the goals that are outlined that you see on page
four.
And that's about 90% of the expenditures that we are involved in. We have a minority and business enterprise program, and we have goals set for each of the categories, and we do our best to meet or exceed those goals, and 2010 was a very good year from that perspective.
Okay, and then I want to ask, on page four, on the non-MWB, that pie is extremely huge. What makes that pie so big?
Well, it just represents the success rate of minority firms versus Anglo firms, and this represents all of the business that the airport's conducting,
mm-hmm.
Construction, procurement, professional services,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, it's 30% of the pie has gone to minority and women business enterprises from DFW Airport's enterprise.
Okay, and I won't get into this, but I'm just going to throw out one. For example, you see Asian American is 12.1 million, and I do agree with Steve if those numbers could be broken down just a little, because it might be 12 in the huge pie, and of that could be two people or three people or one person, and that one person can make up 12.1 million. So I would like to see that broken down. Even with Native Americans and others, that $3 million can be one company that makes up that, and then they go and subcontract to the others that makes that $3 million. So if we can see it broken down, I surely would appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
We'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Jeff, I just want to reiterate what my colleagues are saying here today, that local participation is very important. You know, Dave talked about small business owners here in Dallas and that he was one, and we recognized a small business owner today who's been in business for 50 years. It's very important to me that we do what we can to make sure that our local businesses are getting part of this huge pie that we see on page four. And so I am also asking for the local breakdown. But what I would also like to ask for on page four is, what have we done in the past 2 years? You show that we're at 29% MWBE participation today. Well, how does that compare to last year or the year before? So I guess what I'm asking for is, have we done better? Are we going backwards? Where are we?
Well, I think... As I said before, I think the numbers are relatively the same in terms of percentages. Our capital programs have fluctuated greatly over the years. I mean, back when between 2000 and 2005, for example, we had a $2.8 billion capital program related to Terminal D and the SkyLink. And that program, we basically achieved over 35% MWB participation. Of course, after that program, the construction dollars pretty much went away from us to probably less than $100 million a year, and now we're ramping back up again. So year by year, I think the percentage is relatively the same. I think the dollars changed just simply because the business has changed, but we can provide you and the council with a historical trend in terms of percentage as well as dollars, but you will see a big fluctuation, especially as these capital programs wind down and new ones get started.
Okay. Yeah, that explanation would help too. And then my last question on page six, I would want that type of information too on that you've given us on page six. Just kind of give us an idea of how that's changed from last year to this year, or 2 years ago to this year. Again, are we doing better? Or are we doing worse?
Again, I think the concessions have been pretty stable because there hasn't been a lot of change out there, and the changes that have taken place in terms of new stores, all of them have had major MWB participation. We've been hovering around 60% probably for the last 5 years.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Fagan,
you know, DFW is obviously one of our jewels that we have. Go to slide five, please. One of the things I always look at when we talk around the horseshoe is benchmarking and then also the goal setting and such. And so I kind of zero in on that, and it looks like you're exceeding your goals. I suspect those goals were set by the your board.
That's correct.
And so it's good to see that you've exceeded those goals, and I've see that pretty much consistent. So that's the as for what I usually look for is where's my trend. We always headed in the right direction. Go to page eight. And that's the second thing is, you know, how are you being recognized? You know, are you, because we expect, obviously, you know, here in Texas, you know, we like to brag and boast and think we're the best. So we like to be, we come back and are we being recognized in the awards that come in? So I, that's a pretty good list right there. I do agree that more we do local, obviously that just makes sense. That's the whole purpose, I think, of this whole program is reaching out and making sure that we spread the wealth around. And then Mary too at the city level as the DFW will be coming back at the local looking what they're doing locally and non-locally. That's one of the things I'd like to see too at the city level, how you break that out. Because the last thing that you know, I always hate to see a contract out of New York City for something and
It's on that report we give you, I think, quarterly.
Good deal.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. All right. Well, once again, Jeff and your team, we appreciate what y'all are doing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Jeff. And I'll be very brief. Jeff, I just want to continue to echo what Councilman Allen has just said, and my other colleagues to the right. And it's about local. I'm just a strong proponent of making sure that we provide the opportunity best we can to the people in which we serve, because growing from within continues to nurture even a greater city. So I strongly encourage for us to continue to grow the people that we have in our community. Reach out when we have to. Let's not shut the door just because, but let's extend that olive branch for local. I push local as much as we possibly can, because the airport and all things belong to us, and we ought to be the ones getting a part of it. But thank you for a great job, but local is where I am.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, too, Mr. Fagan, for all of your work and what you've done at DFW. I got to thank your staff, Mr. Ritter and Ms. Valdez Thomas. Is that right? Yeah. And also Ms. Washington on our board. I've seen firsthand how you all deal with MWBE. And I'll tell you, Ms. Washington's at the head of the class. That entire board, I have not seen a contract come through there that MWB wasn't number one priority on the list of your contracts. And I appreciate that. And like Mr. Allen said, your figures show that. I think that's some very good percentages that you all have come up with. Might be nice to see, and I don't know whether you have that, how we fare with other big airports on our MWBE. And I'll bet it's way up there. So I appreciate what's going on there. And to Ms. Washington, you and the board, I don't remember a time that I haven't been there that MWB wasn't high priority and it was brought up. And I don't remember a contract it wasn't brought up in, and that the staff and your members didn't make sure it was high and high priority. And I remember, and I'm not sure, I think there was a meeting that locality was a big point on your MWBE. I believe there was one case there that they brought it up in particular, and that you all do look at that. And I think that's great. And we do need locals to be there as much as we can. But my hat's off to you. I've seen you in action. You do a great job. I want to thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fagan.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mayor. And this dovetails a little bit of what Mr. Gadane and Mr. Caraway said. It's about leadership and people. And I'm just checkmark for the leadership of DFW Airport. I appreciate your efforts as the lead dog in the pack. That's a positive thing. I read in the paper a week or so ago your CFO, Chris Poinsettia, was honored as amongst his peers, and that's another checkmark for DFW Airport. I'm proud that we are 7-Eleven's owner of that airport, and every chance I get, I talk about the fact that DFW Airport shows that even in the hot and the good and the bad times, we run a lean, mean machine that meets customers' expectations, the employees' expectations, the vendors' expectations, and it's no cakewalk. I appreciate that, but I just want to say thank you, Phil. You're a positive addition to their staff. You did a fabulous job when you were with TI in your previous life, and it was very much a check mark for you to bring him on board. But I appreciate that, and I just wanted to make the comment about Chris being honored as a CFO, because you don't hear much about a CFO, council member, until there's problems. And then it's, what happened? Why did this happen? What this, that, and the other? So I want to publicly raise him up, and I appreciate him. When DFW has issues coming before budget and finance or the council, you've always taken the time to visit with me. I'm a financial type guy, and I like going through the numbers, and you've been very patient with me and my questions, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor, and Phil and to Bernice, thank you for being here. Jeff, congratulations on all the recognition. I think Mr. Gadane pointed this out. I'd like to see just a comparison to other airports the same size to see how we're doing. And then I think a couple of colleagues talked about just a historical breakdown of how we've been doing with MWDE. And then goals, the outreach and the goals, will they be increased because of the future opportunities that we have here stated on page number 7, that, how will those goals be increased and how will we attain those goals? I think it's really important. I think another thing in this is to recognize the MWDE folks that have had contracts and have contracts at DFW, how they have been recognized as well. So I think that, when you do that, you not only elevate the airport, but the folks that have brought you up there too. So I think that I'd like to see that in future future reports.
Right. Well,
thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Fagan, thank you for your very excellent report and all the work that is done at DFW by you and the rest of the leadership team. You really are exceptional leaders, not only locally, but nationally and internationally. Ms. Washington, we also thank you for your leadership. And I echo what Mr. Gadane said. Ms. Washington watches out for this area. We can be absolutely certain. I can rest easily because I know Ms. Washington has got this covered, and she has such a soft voice that it's difficult for them to hear her at DFW, but she takes care of business nonetheless. Also, Ms. Washington, thank you for letting us know that much of the information that we're asking for is on your website, and a very, very good website. And so I want everyone who's listening to know that we can go on the internet right now and access much of the information that we are asking for and that has been requested. Also, I appreciate, Mr. Fagan, many of my colleagues' concerns for local outreach, but I do want us to be aware that while we own DFW, we are under a national umbrella because this is an aviation industry. That industry is very much controlled by the federal government. The local government is very, very, very severely restricted in what it can do in a national enterprise. And the national enterprise does not allow us to make local a criteria. While we reach out, we cannot make that a criteria because this is truly a federal enterprise. Thank you again so much for what you're doing. Mr. Mayor, you're so kind to allow me to speak. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to have you. Mr. Fagan, thank you very much. Appreciate you being with us.
Appreciate it very much.
Why don't we move on and see if we can't get some progress on the next briefing on the tax, local sales tax.
I wanted to give you a little bit of an introduction here. This is a presentation that the chair and vice chair of Finance and Audit received along with the committee and thought that it was very worthwhile for the rest of the council to see it. It is informative and I think very interesting. I'd like to introduce to you Bill Oney, who is an economist researcher in economic development, and he will make the presentation to you. He's very smart, very good, and we frequently do not have time to pause and think about data, and this is an opportunity that we have to share this with you, and I'd welcome Mr. Allen having allowed us to do this.
Yeah. Mr. Allen, as the chair of our budget finance, do you want to make a couple of introductory comments?
Just real quick, Councilwoman Morgulin and myself, we talked about the sales tax because it is so important. It's our second largest revenue stream, so we wanted an update. And after we heard this update and what a good one it was, and Ms. Hill recommended that we bring this to the full council, so I hope everyone else will enjoy it just as much as we did and find it just as beneficial.
Okay. Thank you. Well, in the interest of time, we won't proceed through every slide, but just to sum up, there's three things that I'd like you to take away from this briefing in terms of how sales tax activity affects Dallas' sales tax revenue. First thing is whether or not different industries' goods are taxable or not. Second thing is the business cycle. And the third factor is the location of the seller. So in slide three, essentially the state authorizes the sales tax. The state of Texas levies a 6.25% sales tax, and they permit localities to levy up to 2 cents in addition to that. And currently, sellers in the city of Dallas are required to collect the maximum amount, which is 8.25%, and that includes 1 cent for the city of Dallas and 1 cent for DART, and then a 6.25 for the state. And as has already been said on slide four, this pie chart just shows you the sales tax revenue is the second largest source of revenue for the city's general fund, and it's about 1/5 of all the general fund revenue, about $1 billion in total, so about $200 million for sales tax. One of the things that's really interesting about the sales tax on slide five, if you look, pretty much every industry has at least some share of its activity that's taxable. And some of these are listed on here. And one of the surprising facts is that retail activity is really not the primary thing driving sales tax. All of these other industries contribute something, and in fact, retail only accounts for about 28% of Dallas's sales tax activity, total sales tax revenue. Now, there's some, move on to the next slide. There's some disconnects between what is taxable and what's happening in the economy and what happens to the city's revenue. So really, economic activity doesn't necessarily translate into revenue for the city. The fastest growing industries in Dallas are these that we all recognize, finance, real estate, et cetera, but very, very few transactions in those industries are taxable. So that doesn't contribute a whole lot. In fact, these industries are only about 7.3% of our total sales tax revenue. And another factor to consider is the industries or the transactions that are taxable, the fastest growing industries are a very small share of the city's total sales tax revenue. On slide seven, you can see that over time, sales tax or the taxable share of all economic activity has declined quite a bit, from 31% in 1992 down to less than 20% last year. And that simply has to do with new industries. Both households and businesses are spending more and more of their income and revenue on services and other things that are not taxable. The one thing I'd call your attention to on slide eight is if you look at the three largest. Okay, well maybe we have a problem with the slide. My slide eight is the table. Can we go forward, please? Again. Okay, yeah, this table right here, slide 10 apparently. On this table, the top three contributors to Dallas' sales tax revenue, retail, information, and utilities, and you look at the growth rates in those, 2% growth in retail over this seven-year period, information is down 17%, utilities is down 4%. So that's one explanation as to why the city's sales tax revenue has not been It has not really changed that much. We've had ups and downs over the decade, but we're essentially now where we were 10 years ago. So can we go back to those bar charts, please? Okay. This first one on slide 8 here just shows that the economy in Dallas has been growing. So the economy has increased from about $90 billion in 2002 to about $115 billion in 2009, but the actual amount of taxable activity has gone down by $500 million. So that should help explain, again, why sales tax is not a real dynamic or rapidly growing share of the city's revenue. Okay, we move on forward. I'm not sure if the slide numbers are going to be accurate at this point. Can we go to the again, please? Okay. There's a this just shows the same information, the data by industry. Okay, this chart gets to the second point I was talking about. So whether or not an industry's goods are taxable is a major driver. The second thing is the business cycle. This shows the last three business cycles that the city's gone through. And actually, if you go back and look at the one in the mid-80s, that downturn, each of those four recessions resulted in an average of a 13% swing in revenue. So from the last year that we had growth before the recession to the first decline, a 13% drop. I'm saying because that's a major factor, that's the equivalent of something like the library budget. So if you want to think about it in those terms, how do you fill that hole when we have a downturn in the way it affects sales tax revenue? And because of the cyclical nature of it, the city staff has spent some time to try to understand the factors that are behind this, the business cycle. Next slide just shows the dates of the recent recessions. On slide 14. 14, please. Okay. City staff put together a forecasting model. And after looking at lots and lots of variables and how they affect the city's, how they relate to the city's sales tax revenue, staff discovered that these four things are the main determinants. So the unemployment rate in the city of Dallas, the amount of occupied retail space that the city has, called a lag term, so sales tax from a couple of quarters before, and then we throw in a variable that explains or helps take care of the end of the year activity. So October, November, December, so you have holiday sales, you have end of year filing, so forth. And so essentially, if you know these four things, you can come within about 4% of explaining the city's revenue in any given quarter. Okay. The next slide just summarizes in concrete terms, as each of these four variables change, what does that mean for our sales tax? So I'll just take the first one as an example. If the city's unemployment rate changes by 1 percentage point, then we can expect our sales tax revenue to go up or down by $1.2 million that quarter. So if our current unemployment rate is about 8.4, if it were to go down to 7.4, we could expect another $1.2 million in revenue each quarter if the unemployment rate stayed that way. And then the same interpretation applies to these other variables. Now, slide 16 has what at first looks like a really impressive chart. It essentially shows if you look at the past and plug in these four variables, the forecast model does a good job of tracking actual historical revenues. But one of the things you really need to understand is that understanding what drove revenues in the past doesn't necessarily mean you can forecast what revenues are going to do in the future, because you have to be able to perfectly forecast all of those explanatory variables to do that. So I think the best way to interpret, or the best way to use this kind of model, is that it tells us what to look for. Okay, watch what's happening in unemployment, watch what's happening in retail activity, and then you can manage your budget and do some short-term planning, maybe a little bit more effectively. Now, slide 17 just gives you an outline of how staff has been integrating this model into the budget development process. And the most important thing to consider is that staff does not do a single forecast. That we will look at different scenarios. So, for instance, this May, we assumed that there was a two-thirds chance that the economy would continue to grow ever so slightly, but then there was also a one-third chance that we would have another recession within the next 12 months. And so you can look and see, well, what's the difference in revenue under those two assumptions? And then management can decide how they want to set their budget targets in the upcoming year based on that type of feedback. Okay, we go on to slide 19, please. Okay, another tool that staff's been using to monitor sales tax, and this is not a forecasting tool, but it's really a budget management tool, Now, revenue varies from month to month, but if you look back, say, over the last 5 years, the first little blue bar here in October, what that means is that the city on average gets 7.3% of its sales tax revenue in October, you know, any given year. So in the next month, you just roll October's value forward, that represents the yellow, and in November we get 7.6%. So we can look at the cumulative revenue to date and then do a little ratio calculation and give us an end-of-year projection. And it's been fairly accurate. We started using this earlier this year, and it came within, I think it was about $1 million of getting the actual number that we hit in fiscal year 2010. So using these budget tools, using a lot of professional judgment, you get the budget target that's shown on slide 20. This gives you a few years of actual sales tax revenue, shows the big decrease we had recently, and then the number that management chose to incorporate into the fiscal 2011 budget. Okay, the third factor that is a major driver of sales tax revenue in the city is the location of the seller. Again, the burden is on the seller to collect revenue, and so where the seller is located, if you go and look on slide 21, you can see total sales activity in the city of Dallas. And what this reflects is where businesses are located, not just retailers, but where every other business that is subject to the sales tax is located. And again, this reflects the historical pattern of individual business decisions over decades and decades. And again, Dallas's major industrial corridor going up 35, the highway corridor is running north, and LBJ, and probably that little rectangle there where North Park is. Those are some of our largest contributors to total sales in the city. Again, this is not taxable sales, but it's total sales. The next two slides look at the same data, but calculate the change over about a seven-year period. And some zip codes reflect increases in sales, some reflect decreases in sales. And the interesting thing about this chart on 23 is that a lot of the red areas, those are areas that saw a decrease in sales activity between 02 and 08, they're on the edges of the city. And probably a portion of that is the result of new retail opportunities in the suburbs. We looked at six cities, Allen, Frisco, Garland, Mesquite, Plano, and Cedar Hill, and over the decade, they added about 18 million square feet of retail space. That's the equivalent of, you know, 8 or 10 major regional shopping malls. But retail doesn't account for all of it, again, because retail is only about 28% of our total revenue. So it's other business activity as well that would account for some of these decreases. Okay. So on slide 24, there were some questions raised about how do socioeconomics and household income affect our sales tax revenue. And interestingly, we did an analysis at the zip code level, and there's a very low correlation between where income is earned and where income is spent. So if you look at zip code by zip code, that just simply reflects people don't spend all of their money where they live. They drive other places to go shopping, they purchase things over the internet, etc. But there's only a 26% correlation between household income, or expenditure, excuse me, and gross sales. But on the other hand, there's a 72% correlation between gross sales and where our businesses are located. So that probably reflects the fact that the business development activity is perhaps a more important thing for our sales tax revenue than actually what is happening to the socioeconomics of the people that live in Dallas. Now, they're both important, but this is just looking at magnitudes. There's a little bit of discussion on slide 26 about very long-term trends. And these are trends that essentially every central city in the country is dealing with right now, these types of issues. And Dallas is well-positioned because of investments that the city's made, because of economic development projects in the downtown area and southern Dallas, the restoration of inner-city neighborhoods. But the long-term success and long-term health of our sales tax revenue will really depend on being successful in these areas. And these are much, much bigger, higher level policy issues that, again, everyone in the country is wrestling with. Finally, slide 27, we threw in some information about the internet. There's a lot of talk about how the internet retailing may be taking away sales tax revenues. And we took some analysis that the comptroller did for the state of Texas. If those assumptions apply to the city, then that means we're losing maybe 2% of our revenue from internet retail transactions. So that's nothing to sneeze at, but it's not a huge amount of revenue. Finally, there's an appendix in here that just provides some additional information on taxable activity for various industries, just so you can see how that there's some pretty peculiar and finely detailed rules on that at the state level. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for giving this presentation again. I did think that this presentation was worth bringing to the entire council because this is such an important part of everything that we do. How much money we have drives everything that we do, especially our quality of life in the city. I think that once we finish a budget, the very next day, we need to start looking as a council, not just as a staff. I think we need to start looking at how much money are we going to have for the next year's budget, because that is going to make such a difference in what we're able to do in the future, and that's something we have to look at long term. That's why I thought the whole council should look at this. I also wanted to highlight what you presented in this briefing. Where businesses are located, in my mind, is directly related to the quality of life in communities. The businesses locate in a certain part of the city, that means that's where the jobs are. If somebody has to travel 30 miles to their job, it makes a difference in transportation. It makes a difference in how much time they have to spend with their children after school. It makes a difference in how much leisure time they have. That, to me, is something we need as elected officials to keep in the forefront of our mind as we talk about how to develop economically and how to spend our budget dollars, where to invest in public-private partnership. Mr. Atkins has been especially vigilant in talking about developing our economic engines in the southern sector, such as Executive Airport. That is something I want to keep in the forefront of this council's mind, because where the businesses go, as you showed on the slide, determines where the money is, and it is important that people are able to spend their money and work closer to where they live. On slide 23, we saw the bleeding effect of where businesses are going. Again, this is something as a council we need to pay attention to, because I don't think there's any one factor that accounts for the bleeding effect. As I said in finance, I think education is a huge factor. Mr. Caraway called this to our attention in a previous briefing, how important education is to where businesses locate, to where rooftops grow. Education is a significant factor, not the only one, but I think it accounts for some of the bleeding, because some of the peripheral cities are trumping us in education. And when businesses move, their families ask first, where are my children going to be educated? Even if they come here first, when the children get old enough to go to school, they leave. Those are the things that I wanted to highlight for this entire council and for everyone listening with bringing this briefing to the entire council. And I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to go ahead and continue the discussion after March. If you come back, we appreciate it. Great presentation, though, and very helpful. There's a lot of good analysis gone into that. Mr. Cadet, did you know Ms. Medrano had a big day yesterday? She did. Yep. Well, it's out now. It's out now. So with that, thank you.
birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Pauline. Happy birthday to you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I think this afternoon I'll have my 34th, well, it's niece and nephew, so. I think it's a she, so. Well, my birthday was yesterday, but. So anyway, I think I'll have number 34 today.
Happy birthday, Pauline. What we'll do is we're going to recess now. We'll come back at 1 o'clock. We'll finish this discussion, have an executive session, and then we'll have speakers now from leave for the day. So, yeah, we'll meet now at 11:30, so in another 7 minutes or so, down on L1. I'm sorry, Ann. Yeah, it's outside. We'll go back into session and we'll begin with our afternoon speakers. We'll begin with our afternoon speakers. Mr. Hopkins, William Hopkins. William Hopkins is not present. Ozumbic? You got it. 3 minutes.
Turn the mic on.
Oh, okay. There you go. It wasn't on at first. My name is Ozumba Lunks, Chief of Minister Ozumba Lunks. You know, I've been talking about the things that transpired to me in 2004, and I tried to resolve some issues. I'm still appealing to the council about what transpired, what happened to me. I really don't want to go here, but I always have to go here. My adversary, Mike Dupree and Grant McCullough, in the 2000 race, as far as the comfort race was concerned, that's what I call them. Mike Dupree visited and worked at the carnival store where I was assaulted and threatened and had a gun pointed at me. One of his constables worked there, so he knew those guys. The chain of order of occurrence of the way this thing transpired. Mike Dupree, the suspects, the point of pistol at me, and the suspect on the day of the arrest, I was charged with deadly contact. I was defending my life. Grand Vitale, ex assistant police officer chief under Terrell Bowden. He was an adversary of mine in that race. He didn't like me, and the police officer told me and other constable that if you have a problem with him, he'll get you back, man. Detective Mays, he came into it by believing Dupree and Tyler with him because they were peace officers, ex peace officers. Al Shakon, the one who told me he was gonna teach me how to act, he's also a Dallas police officer. And unrest Gerard James, the partner with the arresting officer. You know, and these guys also conspired against my family member because of something. This is low down and dirty, and a lot of things happened. And I was told things after this thing transpired that I picked up on from people in the neighborhood and guys at the scene and know what transpired. They were telling me things. Some investigators that used to work with me that were talking to people. And it's real nasty, low down and dirty what they did to me. Dirty. It's deeper than what you think. If it can happen, it will happen. So don't think that someone tell you something far-fetched. I was listening at the CIA and some stuff that happened during the war and different things about how people get set up and lied upon. It happened to me. It may sound far-fetched, but if it can happen, it will happen. So I've been praying to God to help me in everything, but I know what happened. These guys know what they did to me, and I know who they are. A lot of them are. And the cat's out the bag. You don't always get away with things. You conspire to go against people in the wrong way. But I know God is going to take care of that, but I would like for y'all to pay my retribution, which y'all put me in jail. They let me out. I had to get a bond to get out and everything. And I was looking at one of the movie stars that was on crack cocaine for the third time. He got released up in Las Vegas on their own recognizance. Here I was, never been arrested nothing. And you know, I mean, I was defending my life, and I was made the suspect, and I don't appreciate that, and I'll be here. I'll be here until I die, just like I said, unless you kill my drag man, I'll be here. I'm not going to work, because I could be in the pen. And I think about all the other innocent people you all have killed, praying for something they didn't do. Thank you, and may God bless you, your children.
Mr. Traylor, is
see here. Mr. Mayor, Mr. Hopkins did not show. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Today I'd like to let the city council know exactly what happened at my residence where I live back on October the 7th, 2010. This was an aggressive, malicious act. Inspector Millbrook came to my home, and when I arrived back to my home, I found him stomping and agitating two of my dogs. And they was confined in a fence. They couldn't get out. And I'm a master trainer. They wouldn't come out the fence even if the gate was open. As I approached him, he sprayed me in the face as well with mace. I fell down on the ground, hit my elbow, my right elbow, and once I done that, he runs over and hops in his truck as fast as he could before I could get to my feet. I called the police, and as I called them, they did arrive and basically told me that they would talk to me. They took his side over mine. They did not do a report for me. I have not been successful in getting a report. I've been assaulted. My animal's been assaulted. He failed to not pay attention to a postage signs that's on my gate. He also had came out there twice that same day. Actually, earlier, and a passerby also saw him stomping at the fence and spraying these dogs again. This was before I got home. And the Dallas Police Department, both violated my rights as a citizen and the rights of my animals. They ignored my complaints. I received a marked letter posted October the 8th about some violations that Mr. Millbrook had wrote back on October the 4th. It's ironic he put that letter in my mail afterwards. I'd already had complied to what they'd asked me to do about the high weeds and all. Mr. Millbrook had no camera. He claimed he was taking pictures according to the police report, but he didn't have a camera in his hand. Mr. Kenner, which is his supervisor, was also there with Mr. Millbrook before I got there. I didn't witness him being there, but my neighbor did, and also a passerby witnessed him there. I called the city council, my council. I haven't received a call back yet. The police appeared in a uniform, and Mr. Kennedy seemed like he was concerned with my complaint. But after I pointed out to Mr. H that I knew that he was there earlier that same day, he turned me off. The second time I called him, he changed his whole lookout on the deal there, and he wouldn't have anything to say to me anymore. He wouldn't return my call again. Basically, what he uttered to me is, talk to Inspector Millbrook, which is his employee. Okay. As a citizen of this community, I'm requesting a formal investigation of Inspector Millbrook's action within the last 180 days. If he treated me like this, sir, I don't understand what you mean. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yes. Yes. Basically, this is brutality and falsification of documents, and thank you.
Mr. Mayor, our final speaker is Gwen Wooten. Ms. Wooten.
Good afternoon. And y'all need to thank Mr. Allen and Mr. Cadane and Caraway for calming me down, because I hadn't planned on being this nice. Anyway, there's some stuff going on around here with this Medicare stuff. Now, I'm 66 years old, and I've been tired about 10 years and old, and, you know, y'all used us up real fast. But I don't understand how a doctor is going to tell me that I got to piss in a cup to get some medicine. Now, I don't agree with that. So my adrenaline came up a little bit, Miss Allen and Mr. Cadane. I feel a little better because my back was hurting like it was hurting before y'all came. I'd be real hostile. I got a problem with that. I don't have to prove nothing to nobody in this country. Being a citizen of the United States of America, proving something to somebody is not what I'm supposed to be able to do, especially when I'm paying you. There are statements going, this is free and this is free and that. No, it's not. It's not free. I paid for Medicare before I received Medicare. Now I want the same treatment your mother got when she was my age and she received her Medicare. I don't want no doctor sending me no physician assistant and whatever they is. They not doctors, and I don't want them. I don't know who gave them no license. No way. And if the only thing they can't do is operate on you, they got 80-year-old people taking drug tests. Who paying for these drug tests? Medicare ain't got no money to pay for no drug tests. See if somebody taking their medicine. How you going to stop drugs from old people? Old people ain't no drug dealers. If I say the real name, y'all might put me out of here. Because you know Oliver North went down there and brought back an airplane full of cocaine. Now, have they took a drug test? Don't ask me to take no drug test. I walk around here like I'm picking cotton and my back is hurting and soaking Epsom salt. I'm not pissing in no cups. Don't ask me to do that. We got some problems going on in this city, and our city manager needs to deal with this. Every time we see somebody, it's a city council member, the mayor, somebody, the city manager runs this city. It is her responsibility to stop these people from killing folks. We don't get to see her, we don't get to hear her until she's celebrating something. It's your job. You're supposed to stop this stuff. This man coming up here telling y'all how he's been brutally abused, and y'all are sitting there like, oh, that's what happens in Dallas. This has to stop. Y'all got all these empty buildings in this city. Don't I want to come here with all this stuff going on here? It was a city before you came, and it's time to make it a city that unifies with people and understand people. And if you can't live with people, then you need to go where you came from and go back down there and live with them people you were with. This is a city with multiple cultures in here. And it's time to start living like it's cultures here. And I also ask the city attorney about paying rent on foreclosed property. It's poor people paying rent for property that's under foreclosure. Where did that money go? And somebody needs to investigate this stuff going on in the city. Y'all got all these buildings and no money. That's terrible.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, that completes our speakers. Now we'll go to, I know there was a couple of questions, Ms. Davis. I think you are next. Questions in regard to the presentation on sales tax.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a couple of questions for the young man to please come forward. I do appreciate this presentation. I think it was a very thorough presentation that you gave. I just want to go back to page 21. And what I want to ask you, based on page 21, what do we need to do to count of so that could be a balance between the North and the South? That's what it looks like. What are some of the things that we need to start looking at as council members to kind of balance the southern sector of that map?
Well, that's probably a fairly long list.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to look at it, another way is a fairly short list. I mean, the pattern on this map really reflects decades and decades of economic development activity. Thousands, tens of thousands of companies making their decision on where to locate.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this the pattern on this map, it reflects a lot of history, lots of individual companies making decisions to locate in one part of the city versus the other. So to the extent that the council can influence individual business decisions going forward, then there are opportunities to change the way this looks. And I think the city is already doing a lot of things in terms of its economic development policy, business parks in the southern part of the city, POD opportunities in the southern part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a continuation of those types of public-private investment opportunities. That's the only thing that will really change this.
Okay.
And it's a very long-term process.
Okay, so what we need now for the, and this is a very, very good map, and I'm going to print this map out and hang it in my office as well and take it to meetings. So what we need is those companies to also take a chance to come to the southern sector where I think that there is economic growth and money power in that community as well. So they almost need to take a chance and come to the southern sector. Would you say I'm a little somewhat, is that what we need to do?
I think you're correct.
Okay. Now, on zip code, how important do zip code play in these maps, the next map on page 22? I saw that you talked about zip code on one of these. How important does zip code play in these areas?
Well, we use zip codes because that's the way the data is collected and reported by the comptroller. So
mm-hmm.
zip codes aren't necessarily, they're artificial boundaries. A lot of times we'd like to have the data a different way.
On page 23, go back to 23.
So there's about 45 zip codes in Dallas, and that's the way we collected the data and produced the maps to generate.
So also the zip code also for a company, for Macy's, for example, do they look at zip codes to find out where to place their stores?
Yes.
We'll go back into session and we'll begin with our afternoon speakers. We'll begin with our afternoon speakers. William Hopkins. William Hopkins is not present. Ozumbas? You got it. 3 minutes. Let me turn the mic on.
Oh, okay. There you go. It wasn't on at first. Yes, my name is Ozuma Lunk, Chief of Minister Ozuma Lunk. You know, I've been talking about the things that transpired to me in 2004, and I tried to resolve some issues and still appealing to the council about what transpired, what happened to me. I really don't want to go here, but I always have to go here. My adversary, Mike Dupree and Grant McTolliver, in the 2000 race, as far as comfort rates were concerned, that's what I call them, Mike Dupree visited and worked at the carnival store where I was assaulted and threatened and had a gun pointed at me. One of his constable worked there, so he knew those guys. To change the order of occurrence of the way this thing transpired, Mike Dupree, the suspects, the point of pistol at me, and the suspect on the day of the arrest, I was charged with deadly contact. I was defending my life. Grand Battalion ex-assistant police officer chief under Terrell Bowden. He was an adversary of mine in that race. He didn't like me, and the police officer told me and other constable that if you have a problem with him, he'll get you back, man. Detective Mays, he came into it by believing, Dupree and Tyler them because they were peace officers, ex-peace officers. Alshon Kern, the one that told me he was going to teach me how to act, he's also a Dallas police officer. And Unrest Gerard James, the partner, was a arresting officer. You know, and these guys also conspired against my family member because of something. This is low down and dirty, and a lot of things happen. And I was told things after this thing transpired that I picked up on from people in the neighborhood and guys at the scene and know what transpired. They were telling me things. There were investigators that used to work with me that were talking to people. And it's real nasty, low down and dirty what they did to me. Dirty. It's deeper than what you think. If it can happen, it will happen. So don't think that someone tell you something that's far-fetched. I was listening to the CIA and some stuff that happened during the war and different things about how people get set up and lied upon. It happened to me. It may sound far-fetched, but if it can happen, it will happen. So I've been praying God to help me and everything, but I know what happened. These guys know what they did to me, and I know who they are. A lot of them are. And the cat's out the bag. You don't always get away with things you conspire to go against people in the wrong way. But I know God is going to take care of that, but I would like for you all to pay my retribution, which you all put me in jail. didn't let me out. I had to get a bond to get out and everything. And I was looking at one of the movie stars that was on crack cocaine for the third time. They got released up in Las Vegas on their own recognizance. Here I was, never been arrested, nothing. And, you know, man, I was defending my life, and I was made the suspect, and I don't appreciate that. And I'll be here. I'll be here until I die. Just like I said, unless you kill my drag man, I'll be here. I'm not going to work, because I could be in the pen. And I think about all the other innocent people you all have killed praying for something they didn't do. Thank you, and may God bless you, your children.
Mr. Traylor, is he here? Mr. Mayor, Mr. Hopkins did not show. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Today I'd like to let the City Council know exactly what happened at my residence where I live back on October the 7th, 2010. This was an aggressive, malicious act. Inspector Millbrook came to my home, and when I arrived back to my home, I found him stomping and agitating two of my dogs. And they was confined in a fence. They couldn't get out. And I'm a master trainer. They wouldn't come out the fence even if the gate was open. As I approached him, he sprayed me in the face as well with mace. I fell down on the ground, hit my elbow, my right elbow, and once I done that, he runs over and hops in his truck as fast as he could before I could get to my feet. I called the police, and as I called them, they did arrive and basically told me that they would talk to me. They took his side over mine. They did not do a report for me. I have not been successful in getting a report. I've been assaulted. My animal's been assaulted. He failed to not pay attention to a postage sign that's on my gate. He also had came out there twice that same day. Actually, earlier, and a passerby also saw him stomping at the fence and spraying these dogs again. This was before I got home. And the Dallas Police Department, you know, both violated my rights as a citizen and the rights of my animals. They ignored my complaints. I received a marked letter posted October the 8th about some violations that Mr. Millbrook had wrote back on October the 4th. It's ironic he put that letter in my mail afterwards. I'd already had complied to what they'd asked me to do about the high weeds and all. Mr. Millbrook had no camera. He claimed he was taking pictures according to the police report, but he didn't have a camera in his hand. Mr. Kennard H., which is his supervisor, was also there with Mr. Millbrook before I got there. I didn't witness him being there, but my neighbor did, and also a passerby witnessed him there. I've called the city council, my council. I haven't received a call back yet. The police appeared in uniform, and Mr. H. seemed like he was, Mr. Kennard H. seemed like he was concerned with my complaint. But after I pointed out to Mr. H. that I knew that he was there earlier that same day, he turned me off. The second time I called him, he changed his whole changed lookout on the deal there, and he wouldn't have anything to say to me anymore. He wouldn't return my call again. Basically, what he uttered to me is, talk to Inspector Millbrook, which is his employee. Okay. As a citizen of this community, I'm requesting a formal investigation of Inspector Millbrook's action within the last 180 days. If he treated me like this, sir, I don't understand what you mean. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yes. Yes.
basically this is brutality and falsification of documents. And, you know, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, our final speaker is Gwen Wooten. Ms. Wooten.
Good afternoon, and y'all need to thank Mr. Allen and Mr. Cadane and Caraway for calming me down, because I hadn't planned on being this nice. Anyway, there's some stuff going on around here with this Medicare stuff. Now, I'm 66 years old, and I've been tired about 10 years and old, and, you know, y'all use us up real fast. But I don't understand how a doctor is going to tell me that I got a piss in a cup to get some medicine. Now, I don't agree with that. So my adrenaline came up a little bit, Miss Allen and Mr. Cadane. I feel a little better because my back was hurting like it was hurting before y'all came. I'd be real hostile. But I got a problem with that. I don't have to prove nothing to nobody in this country. Being a citizen of the United States of America, proving something to somebody is not what I'm supposed to be able to do, especially when I'm paying you. There are statements on this is free and this is free and that. No, it's not. It's not free. I paid for Medicare before I received Medicare. Now I want the same treatment your mother got when she was my age and she received them. And I don't want no doctor sending me no physician assistant and whatever they is. They not doctors, and I don't want them. I don't know who gave them no license, no way. And if the only thing they can't do is operate on you, they got 80-year-old people taking drug tests. Who paying for these drug tests? Medicare ain't got no money to pay for no drug tests. See if somebody taking their medicine. How you gonna stop drugs from old people? Old people ain't no drug dealers. If I say the real name, y'all might put me out of here. Because you know Oliver North went down there and brought back an airplane full of cocaine. Now, have they took a drug test? Don't ask me to take no drug test. I walk around here like I'm picking cotton and my back is hurting and soaking Epsom salt. I'm not pissing in no cups. Don't ask me to do that. We got some problems going on in this city, and our city manager needs to deal with this. Every time we see somebody, it's a city council member, the mayor or somebody. The city manager runs this city. It is her responsibility to stop these people from killing folks. We don't get to see her. We don't get to hear her until she's celebrating something. It's your job. You're supposed to stop this stuff. This man coming up here telling y'all how he's been brutally abused, and y'all are sitting there like, oh, that's what happens in Dallas. This has to stop. Y'all got all these empty buildings in this city. Nobody want to come here with all this stuff going on here. It was a city before you came, and it's time to make it a city that unifies with people and understand people. And if you can't live with people, then you need to go where you came from and go back down there and live with them people you were with. This is a city with multiple cultures in here. And it's time to start living like it's cultures here. And I also ask the city attorney about paying rent on foreclosed property. It's poor people paying rent for property that's under foreclosure. Where did that money go? And somebody needs to investigate this stuff going on in the city. Y'all got all these buildings and no money. That's terrible.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, that completes our speakers. Now we'll go to, I know there was a couple of questions. Ms. Davis, I think you are next. Questions in regard to the presentation on sales tax.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a couple questions for the young man to please come forward. I do appreciate this presentation. I think it was a very thorough presentation that you gave. I just want to go back to page 21. And what I want to ask you, based on page 21, what do we need to do to count of so that can be a balance between the north and the south? That's what it looks like. What are some of the things that we need to start looking at as council members to kind of balance the southern sector of that map?
Well, that's probably a fairly long list. Mm-hmm. And one way to look at it, another way is it's a fairly short list. I mean, this the pattern on this map really reflects decades and decades of economic development activity. Thousands, tens of thousands of companies making their decision on where to locate.
I can't hear you, so I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this the pattern on this map, it reflects a lot of history, lots of individual companies making decisions to locate in one part of the city versus the other. So to the extent that the council can influence individual business decisions going forward, then there are opportunities to change the way this looks. And I think the city is already doing a lot of things in terms of its economic development policy, business parks in the southern part of the city, TOD opportunities in the southern part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a continuation of those types of public-private investment opportunities. That's the only thing that will really change this.
Okay.
And it's a very long-term process.
Okay, so what we need now for the, and this is a very, very good map, and I'm going to print this map out and hang it in my office as well and take it to meetings. So what we need is those companies to also take a chance to come to the southern sector where I think that there is economic growth and money power in that community as well. So they almost need to take a chance and come to the southern sector, which is Selma. Is that what we need to do?
I think you're correct.
Okay. Now, on zip code, how important do zip code play in these maps, the next map on page 22? I saw that you talked about zip code on one of these. How important does zip code play in these areas?
Well, we use zip codes because that's the way the data is collected and reported by the comptroller. So
mm-hmm.
zip codes aren't necessarily, they're artificial boundaries. A lot of times we'd like to have the data a different way.
On page 23, let's go back to 23.
Yeah. So there's about 45 zip codes in Dallas, and that's the way we collected the data and produced the maps to generate.
And so also the zip code also for a company, for Macy's, for example, do they look at zip codes to find out where to place their stores?
Yes.
And so if they look at a map like 21 and seeing that all the growth is in the northern sector of the city, then they perhaps would not come to the southern sector because they don't see buying power there. Am I somewhat right?
I think that's partly true. Retailers look at a lot of different variables, and one of the situations we're in right now, toward the end of the decade, the official census data that's out there is from 2000. We won't know what's happening with the 2010 census until next year.
Okay.
And I think there's going to be some changes in retail decision making based on that data, because we've seen a lot of infill development, we've seen a lot of population growth in neighborhoods in Dallas that the retailers don't pay attention to because it's not officially documented.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see some marginal improvements when we have some new real data.
And also this is good for me because looking at the map on 21, on page 21, it also looks at, that map is extremely important, and to my southern colleagues, it looks at buying power, it looks at dollar power, it looks at church power, money power, and the most important thing, it looks at job power. So looking at the map on page 21, the job is more in the northern sector. Now I don't know what's going to happen next year, because you're right, based on the upcoming census. But right now what we're seeing, the data, is in the southern sector, is there any job based on this map, or they just didn't put the data out there?
Well, I think we were both on the DART tour yesterday,
uh-huh.
and we went down the southeast corridor of the Green Line, and we
okay.
stopped right across from Daltile, which is right there at Butner.
Uh-huh.
I was having a conversation. Daltile is probably one of the largest employers in the southern half
mm-hmm.
of the city. There's probably only a half a dozen or so that have at least 1,000 employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the northern side of the city, there's scores and scores of businesses like that. So you're largely correct that there's not a lot of major employment centers down south yet, especially far south. So that's why I think the Inland Port area, the UNT area,
mm-hmm.
Dallas Executive, those are the real development anchors that
mm-hmm.
city is working on to build a job base from.
And this is my last question, Mr. Mayor, and I'll be finished. What do we need to do as a city to help move some of this buying power to the Deep South and the South itself? Do we do the private-public partnership, or do we go out and ask these companies to take a chance and come into these type of communities?
Well, it's a lot of things, and I'm probably not the best qualified person to address that, but I think someone like our economic development director, or maybe AC, that's more their pay grade, I think.
Well, that math is quite interesting, Carl, because it is, and we are going to somehow, and I know that you've done a wonderful job, and let me say that, you've done a wonderful job standing before us just to talk about this, and I appreciate you for that. But I think we're going to have to do something, and I don't have the answer right now to balance that out on that map so we can have some buying power in the southern part of our city. And what we see down on 67, is that Redbird Mall?
Yes.
Okay. AC, can you come forward, please? AC, and I just want to thank this gentleman here for coming before us, and I appreciate the fact he was able to talk about this with us. What do we need to do to kind of even that map out long term?
The efforts that we have underway are helping to do that in the future. The work that's been done starting in 06 with the bond program to put infrastructure in place, the Dallas Forward Plan is to have those overall planning perspectives. The investments that we have through the various grant programs on Bear Street, on Lancaster, the UNT development. On Lancaster, we're working with the VA. All of those efforts are going to be changing the way that map is going to be looking in the next 10 years. And so those are the things that are in place, but certainly more can be done when we look forward to more of a bond program that we would be having in 12 to continue those efforts. That will all work to move in the momentum that we have started.
Yeah, and I'll interject and follow. All of the things that AC touched on are a fraction of the investment of what's needed. It has to be private investment. It all over. I'm not talking in general, but especially talking about the southern sector. Everything that AC went, you kind of add up all the dollars, that is absolutely a fraction of the investment other place. If you don't bring in private investment, you're done. And that's what the goal has to be, is bring in private investors, because that's where you leverage the big dollars. Mr. Atkins?
Thank you, Mayor. Good question, Carol. You know, we look at on page, I think page 21, and kind of go to page 21, you look at the green areas, and you also look at the zip code, and you look at the green area about 6 or 7 and Loop 12, and you look at so much dollars is spent in the north portion over there. And I just wish we can break down by zip code, you know, like 75237, 75232. There's a whole lot of buying power. They're leaving that zip code, and they're going out there to the Galleria, to the north part, even though it's in the city of Dallas. But they spend their money outside the neighborhood. And when you do that, you don't have development inside the neighborhood development because they're going outside the neighborhood. So how do you balance that out? And that's a very important key. And I think that if we can trace the dollars in sale tax, because every major department store, they check by sale, by zip code, you know, where you came, where, how you spend your money. And you see there's a whole lot of buying power in the southern sector, but it's going north. Also, you go back and you look at the history of the city of Dallas with private business. They talk about TI, for example. Even though TI is further more north, but at one time 70% of TI workforce lived south. And so therefore you got 75% of your workforce is driving and commuting a long range. So therefore their buying power is leaving the south, is going north because they are closer to their job. And so how do we encourage those private businesses to come south. And that's how we needed to look at another way how we track our sales tax, because number one, it's very important to get the private business to come here, but it's also very important how do you collectively bring those people to the southern sector and make sure they are developing. Because of infrastructure, because of Southwest Center Mall, you do not have proper egress and regress. That's something that we did not do. That's something over a period of time that it just got kind of isolated in. You know, we look at some of the projects, you know, UNT, the Inland Port, and Dallas Tech Airport. And I think with sales tax and what we're trying to generate an avenue for sales tax. And if you look at Dallas Tech Airport, it is a core asset to the city of Dallas. And if you look at that core asset and you kind of visualize the Dallas Tech Airport versus at Allison Airport, and you look at it around Allison Airport, and which Dallas Tech Airport is larger than Allison Airport, you look at the economic impact it's doing for the city of Allison with sales tax and property tax, because you see all the business around that airport. So there is another way, how do we try to justify, how do we find a way to make sure those businesses is here, how do you kind of lure those people to the district. I guess what I'd be looking at, you know, you see so much green going north, and you see so much buying power is going south. How do we track sales tax versus trying to attract sales tax to corporations? You know, those corporations and business is north, but the sales tax that come from business neighborhood. In order to be a strong neighborhood, you want to keep the sales tax buying, you know, inside that own, spend the money maybe four or five, six times turning the money in the neighborhood. So it generates there. So is there a way that we can track sales tax versus corporation coming into the community?
Well, in fact, why don't you follow up and get us two charts based on Mr. Atkins' request? Mm-hmm. One, why don't you do the same kind of chart, color chart, that shows where the income is in the city? So look at it by geographic area and then impute by census, sure, the median incomes. And then the second one, why don't you do one that shows weightings of where the real property value is throughout the city. So same kind of colored chart. You'll have to use relative colors. Sure. But that will address the two things that are being raised. So why don't you get those two charts to us? That'd be very good.
Right. And last thing, of course, is, Mark, you know that, you know, I'm glad that we did bring this presentation here with a sale, but it do show that we got a long way to go in order to, this does not happen overnight. It's take a long way to go, and I think we need to do more tours to the southern sector. You know, I know we talk about, you know, Long Star Racetrack, the Texas Motor Speedway, that we had a whole lot of opportunity for big corporations to come to the southern sector. They did not come, so we need to try to find out how do we lure those big corporations to come there. Again, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Gilbert, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me just echo and say to the gentleman, very fine presentation, and it enlightened our eyes quite a bit. Let me speak on just a few things, and, you know, I'm just going to speak on the reality of the way I see it, being from here, born and raised in South Dallas, graduating on into Oak Cliff. I've been here all my life, born at the old Parkland Hospital, Journey Telephone, on Maple. And it's not like we did not have, because as we struggle now in the southern sector to say that we do not have a movie theater. Once we had the State Theater on Thomason Hall, the Lego Theater on 2nd Avenue, the Forest Theater that's still there but not a theater operative today on MLK, the Del Sec Theater where I used to go on Saturdays, and on 2nd Avenue where the Fair Park is, the Crest Theater on Lancaster, the Cinderella Drive-In on Lamar, the Starlight Drive-In on Lamar, the Keith Drive-In out on now Walton Walker, and I think it was a theater on Bear Street at that particular particular time. And I still may be missing one or two. And okay. Yeah. So my point is, it's not like we did not have, we've had. And I think the question should be what happened, not necessarily as we continue to struggle to bring it back. I look at this map on page 21, but I look back and can recall all of the theaters, for example, that we had. And then we talk about Southwest Cinema Mall, formerly the Redbird Mall, but then we had a vibrant Lancaster Key Shopping Center. Margot Lemo's, the bowling alley, and everything was there. And I think the question begs to me, what happened? It's not like economic development has not been there. It's not like the southern sector has not paid or played its part in a tax base where we should have some kind of color. The reason there's no color is because everything is gone. So my concern is, what happened? When we go back to Staten Hall, well, that's where Henderson's Chicken, the original Henderson's Chicken, Papa Dad's Barbecue and all of that was there. But for whatever the reason, all of that left, and then it shifted somewhere else, and the land stayed vacant, and then all of a sudden now we have a vibrant community there. It's what we do. And what we're willing to roll our sleeves up. I do hear the private sector investments need to come in, but I think that the strong focus should be not in ones and twos as we move toward trying to revitalize. And I don't think that we should be talking about just the inland port. I think we should be talking about the intercommunity and in conjunction with the inland port. There have been jobs and corporations that were there. Procter & Gamble was one that employed everybody. I worked there at one point at Procter & Gamble on Lamar. But now they are no longer there. So it's not like the southern sector has not had. It is what happened to bring about the sudden disappearance of things. And was it that the lure, as you spoke of in one sense of the word, Atkins, Ms. Atkins, when you look at the Galleria, when the inner city was deteriorating, other options were drawing them out. And it took away from the southern sector and the few dollars that were once being generated, the jobs that were once being generated, the economic vibrancy that was once being generated found its way having to have to go elsewhere because everything just disintegrated in our community. We didn't have to go places to get things done. We were getting them done within our community, and it was vibrant. With that, I'm only suggesting that we, the council, mayor, and under your leadership, that we begin to figure out what type of impact that we can have. I think we, as the community, before anybody comes there, we can talk all this hope, all we want. I do not expect for anybody to come within our community until our community is vibrant, it's cleaned up, it provides a safe operative and opportunity for folks and businesses to come in. And I forgot about the Wynwood Theater. It was there too, Dave, since you looked up there. But who is going to come in the midst of blight and things and say we're going to open up a business? What company is going to come? So now I think that as we move toward this bond election and other activities and opportunities that are going to be before us, that we as a council should make some real tough decisions to say that we're going to have to do some significant things within the southern sector, but then we have to make sure that we clean it up. One reason that when you see the need for cameras to kind of control the crime, I'm not going to beat up this wet and dry thing, but you know, we talked about the Four Loko. Nobody heard me, but it's in the news now because the kids have got, the 14-year-olds have gotten killed from drinking that stuff. If those are the types of products, if these are the types of things that are allowed, not just that, but I'm speaking of the attention that we're not really giving the inner community to figure out how we can go in, clean up, and excite some people, bring the people with the dollars in so that we can have this private investment. We can show these opportunities, and they know that the city completely are standing behind this effort. Then and only then we can begin to make a change. If they know that it's going to be something that we're going to just slightly be behind, then we're just turning on our microphones, in my opinion, and are wasting our breath. We're going to have a solid commitment from the city on an effort to concentrate on what is going to change, transform, repair, and rebuild our community. It does not make sense for us to have a particular area that's sitting there with prime property in the middle of the neighborhood, in the middle of the community, and we don't do the things like we did when we made the commitment to Pinnacle Park. When you made a commitment to Pinnacle Park on I-30 at Crockwell Hill, that's the type of commitment that we have to make if we're going to transform it. We took a blighted area that had absolutely nothing there, created the expressways, the exit roads, and brought in all of the different people. And look at it. It is one heck of a tax base. It is one beautiful community there. But it was a project that we took on as a major project. And we have to do the same thing with the southern section. It cannot be that we're going to start it way out at the Inland Port. We must do the Inland Port. I support the Inland Port. We can't say we're going to start at Southwest Center Mall. I support Southwest Center Mall. But we're going to have to get a grip on the heart of that community. And we're going to have to do the same thing we did at the Inland Port with the same type of force and commitment and going out and getting all of the quality businesses. Not just anybody. We have to have the quality businesses there, because every time we need something from Office Max or Office Depot or somewhere, then we have to leave where we live to go and find it, and that's why the money leaves the southern sector, because we always have to go somewhere else to get it. Quality grocery stores, the same. I'm going to stop, but I know I'm rambling, but I want to make sure y'all understand that the story that I'm telling is true. The solution that I'm putting on the table is one that, when it comes down to the bond program and other opportunities, we have to have that solid commitment that we're going to change it. Not a store at a time and a street at a time. We got to change it, and I only use Pinnacle Park as an example, because Pinnacle Park was a major transition, a major undertaking. But look at it today. Restaurants, grocery stores, big boxes, you name it, it's all there. And I'm very proud to be there. And I do shop over there, Dave Newman, at Pinnacle Park sometime. I do go. I know you appreciate it, but we want to be appreciating you over there on Lancaster somewhere and in South Dallas, too. Yeah, I just want to let you know. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Adler, please.
Again, it's very good presentation on sales tax. And the revenues that we generate from it. Slide 11. Go to slide 10. Yeah, there you go. So we had 2009 total sales, Dallas almost $22 billion. Correct?
Yes.
That's a big number. That's a big number. Where I'm going with that number, you know, we get 1% of that money. Ladies and gentlemen, so we're bringing in a little over $200 million a year. It's nice to always remember that we're giving DART $200 million a year. And it's very nice to remember, particularly when down in Austin, that the great state of Texas is taking, $1.3 billion from us, which is fine. It's their share. But when we're down, state of Texas, just remember that we should walk with our shoulders up, our head up, because they got $1.3 billion of our sales tax money. And so we want our fair share of that money, too. So, again, very good presentation. And, Judge Hill, thanks for your leadership in bringing this to the briefing.
Terrific. I would add my thanks. Not only the good presentation, but you clearly have a command of the issues that's important one. So we appreciate that, appreciate your work. Just two things. On slide 12, and you and I were visiting on this,
The reality of it is sales tax revenue is down about 25% mm-hmm. in a real basis over the last 10 years, right?
Something like that.
Plus or minus looking at 2 to 3% on a compounded inflation.
Right.
Yeah. So we're down 25%, and that's citywide. We're not talking about specific areas, it's citywide. So we've got to start growing in space if we're going to be successful. A couple of the interesting points that you raised and trends on the taxable and non-taxable sales, that mix has changed for us. So it's not just an absolute, but it's a mix change. Can you relate that as best you can to, is that the same trend you'd see on a regional basis and you'd see on a statewide basis?
Yes. The trends are the same. The numbers are a little bit different. We did have a chance to look this up. If you look at slide, I believe slide 10, it has the percentage bar chart. And the next one after that, that one right there. Your slide 9, I guess. Okay. So in 2002 in Dallas, it was 24.2%, went down to 19%. The comparable numbers for the Metroplex, for DFW, it was 26.3 down to 23.6. So it fell a little less than 3%. State numbers would be 24.6 down to 20.9. So it's the trends are the same.
Quite much the same trend.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And just, again, if you looked at total sales tax growth, Metroplex and state, what would those numbers look like just so we've got some reference point?
Well, the total sales, the change in total sales in City of Dallas, the gross number was up about 23%, okay, but we actually had a decrease in the taxable amount. DFW was up 32%. Texas was up 61%.
Okay, so Dallas, 23.
Yes.
Metroplex, 32.
And the state was 61%. That's in total sales growth, even though the taxable share has been declining.
And that's what the key is to grow. You grow it, solve a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. Good job.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not growing enough. We're not growing enough. Everybody's growing faster than we are.
What do you say? We're not growing enough people or we're not business?
Economic base. I'd say economic base in total. And then there's different components of that go into it. No, I think it's more than business. I'd say consumer spending because that goes into sales tax. And I'd also say industrial spending too. It's both.
Okay.
It's to have policies that, to be truthful with you, attract more businesses to our area.
And then we saw the out of parameter, that's where the decline, all the out of parameters, which would lead you to believe it was the suburbs was pulling that money away.
Absolutely.
Everything was out of parameter.
Yeah, I mean, money is going to go where it's welcome. Old adage. And that's where it's welcome. That's how it measures being welcome.
But that's not the only factor. It is a very complicated formula, and I still think education is at the top of the list.
I'd love to have
that debate. Jerry, I agree. Education is so important, and I look forward to the day though that we tout the success stories, because it's like winning the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl ones that win it, they're ones that are out there saying, "Hey, we're gonna do it. We're winning."
Absolutely.
It's attitude, and they're the ones that win it, and the ones that are down there saying we're not as good as we should be. Now, don't get me wrong; they're gonna try harder. But in general, they're not going to win the Super Bowl. And they've done, we've come a long way with DISD, and they're doing a good job. I just, we just need to stay positive on that.
Myron, let me just one step.
Let me just address Ms. Hill.
Okay.
And the education is absolutely critical.
I'm not criticizing DISD. DISD has come a long way, but there still is a long way to go, and just said perception is irrelevant, because every time we see something in the media, print or broadcast about the southern sector, is negative.
Yep.
We don't hear the success stories.
In themselves, it says, also, we took a train ride yesterday, the Green Line, with so much opportunity around the Green Line, so much opportunity. The press doesn't write about those type of things. If it ain't killing, if it ain't booze, if it ain't prostitution, if it ain't some drugs, those things play an effect on the mind. It plays an effect on day-to-day living in inner-city neighborhoods in the southern sector. So if you are coming into a city to move, the first thing you're going to do is call the Greater Chamber of Commerce and say, what should I move? Don't move south. It's bad. It's too much crime. It's all of these things. Where should I move? Let's move to State Thomas and Hall, move to the north, because that's where you're going to find all the things you need. It's okay. We all just, at the end of the day, Mayor, have to talk about these things, which makes, I think, a healthy community. And I will say that I do believe when I took my colleague, Linda Coop, to my side of District 7, and I want to and tour with Linda to your side and see some things. One of the things that I have to base my success on as being a council member are the small success. The Bear Street, the Spring Avenue, what we're trying to do at Grand and Bobby B. Cullum. It's the small success. That's the only thing I can base my success on as a council member, the small success. I can't base it on the big success. And so I just think that media plays an important role on the future of the southern sector.
Well, but let me just say this one time, and I'll make mine short. And Jerry, and to Jerry, to Vonsville, and to Ms. Davis, and Mayor. The first problem, and Jerry, you're right. The first thing is we have the southern sector. But we don't have an eastern sector, and we don't have a northern sector, and we don't have a western sector,
right.
But we have the southern sector. And the first thing that has to take place through what we're talking about is that we have to identify our area, and we are misidentified every time you say the southern sector. That's number one. Kessler Park is Kessler Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Lake Highland is Lake Highland. University Park,
University
Hamilton Park, they have their own identity.
Mm-hmm.
I do not live in South Dallas, and it goes back to the media. I live in Oak Cliff. I don't even live in South Oak Cliff. I live in Oak Cliff, where the telephone number was Whitehall 2. That's 942. South Oak Cliff is 371, which was Franklin, but that was identified as South Oak Cliff. And then you have Singing Hills, as you have other areas, Elder Oaks. But Mayor, my point to you is that it gives the negative connotation when something happens, and then they put everything that takes place on South Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And it encompasses everything. It can happen in Pleasant Grove. They call it South Dallas. My area that I represent, one of them, Bugner Terrace, I almost got unelected when I mistakenly called Bugner Terrace Pleasant Grove. They didn't like that. They say, we are Bugner Terrace. And then you have the other areas. So, Mayor, I'm asking your assistance and this council to help us be identified for who we are, and then that helps the demographics of when something takes place in South Dallas, then it's South Dallas. If it took place in Oak Cliff or South Oak Cliff or Redbird or any other identifiable area, it takes that negative connotation down a few notches, because everybody seems to think when the news reports it that if it happens over in the southern sector, all of that is South Dallas. So then when corporations come, when businesses come, then they look at it and they say, yeah, South Dallas, we're not going. All of South Dallas is not bad. I have some areas directly and immediately in my district that have some heavy concerns. But all of the southern sector should not have to wear that black eye that's happening in my particular area. So I just want to say that. Until we remove this
this thing of what is South Dallas, what should be, because Carol and David represent South Dallas. That's where you represent is South Dallas. You do not represent, but you have other, you cross the bridge, of course, but I'm using that as an example. But Tenille does not represent South Dallas. Now, and until we get rid of that stigma, then that is what is one of the things that's holding us back.
And I get calls.
Ms. Margolin, you were trying to get in.
I'm sorry. And
Ms. Margolin, did you want to make a comment earlier?
Thank you. I'm sort of interrupting that conversation, but you can get back to it again. My takeaway from this presentation is really summarized on slides 8, 9, and 10. And I was very, very surprised to see that, in fact, our economy, as represented by sales, has really grown by $22 billion or so since 2002. But what has changed is the mix of what's taxable. So that if you look at slide 10, you see that construction's been up 32%, but there's not much taxable there. You see that information is 20% of what's taxable to us, but it's down by 17%. So what I see is an economy that's growing, but a sales tax that's shrinking. And really, at a city level, realizing that there's not an awful lot we can do about that, because the city doesn't have the power to determine what's taxed and what isn't taxed. So that's really what was kind of surprising to me, to learn that retail sales only make up 27% of taxable sales in the city, and that's staying pretty stagnant. So this was really kind of eye-opening to me, just to understand the scope of what's taxable, what categories are growing, what categories are shrinking, and seeing that even though our sales are growing, our sales taxes are declining.
Thank you. Mr. Rackus?
Yes, and I agree with Duane and Carol and everybody we're talking about. But also, Jerry, I listened to your comment and to my comment. And education, you know, there are so many elements that drive sales tax. In my district alone, in 2011, I got two high schools going to be opened up. I got four elementary schools going to be opened up. I got two middle schools and four charter schools in 2011. For the last 5 years, those schools was not there. So the people who was buying their house, buying groceries, were living there, they were moving outside of the neighborhood. So they are taking their sales tax and their property tax and buying within. And I think one thing that really drives sales tax is go back to the same thing. You got to eat, sleep, entertain in your neighborhood so that you keep spending that dollar inside a neighborhood. In our neighborhood, a dollar might turn once or twice. In some neighborhoods, they turn five or six or seven times, and they build and buy more in sales tax process. But to do that, when we have the greater Dallas Chamber, not the Dallas Chamber, but the greater Dallas Chamber, we're talking about region. So when you got people talking about a region deal, now we are competing with the suburbs. So we don't have the Dallas Chamber say, we are for Dallas. And so in order to make the city grow, somebody got to stand up. I don't care about the region. I don't care about Irving. I care about my corral inside of my neighborhood. And when our property tax go up, we got to worry about our own corral. And so I think we need to look at our corral and say north, east, west, and south is the same corral. So how do we make all the horses graze on east, west, and south pasture?
And I think one of the things that we have...
Just a second.
Okay.
Ms. Coop and then Ms.
Okay.
I don't know. I had a question for the staff, but they're no longer there. So I guess my question is, since it looks like the charts are indicating that perhaps sales tax is not really so much the issue, and I talked to the mayor about this offline when we were at lunch or at the event earlier today, and he felt like the property tax, you know, is the bulk of the taxes that are generated that come in, and the personal and the business and personal property tax. Is there a way to analyze that? Because my thought was that if you could, you know, spend an awful lot of money in incentives and so on and so forth, we get a lot of we do a lot of stuff with various different sources, putting rooftops in. But if you could figure out what business and personal property tax that the highest ones that come into the city, which businesses are those, which ones are taxed because of the nature of their business, you get more money off of. If you could figure out which businesses those were, then wouldn't you be better off trying to get those businesses to come to your city? Because then that would be a growth thing. Okay, those would be the businesses. There are some businesses that don't pay a lot of taxes, and it's borne out by the sales tax here. And there's also a lot of businesses that don't have a lot of equipment tax and so on and so forth. But there are some businesses that do. And so my question to you is, do you know those businesses that, you know, maybe we think we know the businesses that generate a lot of taxes and a lot of growth, but do we really know that?
We know it anecdotally.
Not who, but yeah. What sectors those are.
I don't know that answer.
But,
you know,
I mean, we can figure that out, surely. I mean,
yeah, it's a comprehensive analysis of the BPP data. Is harder than the real property data because it's not included in the GIS files that come over from DCAT. So it's more of a selective type of analysis.
Is it worth our while to figure that out? Is it such to our economy that it's important?
Perhaps. You know, BPP has not been a very dynamic component of real property. If you look back over the last decade, a lot of it was, we had really, really steady growth in residential. We had cyclical growth in the commercial real, and BPP didn't change a whole lot.
But those industries that manufacture goods and keep their goods housed in Dallas, therefore they've got inventory here, mm-hmm. and they're taxed on that inventory. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of businesses I would assume that you'd want to have.
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, there's another analysis to be had, in my opinion, and I don't know how to go about doing that, but I think there's another section to it that we actually perhaps have overlooked. And Mayor, I just encourage you at another time. I mean, it's, you know, we all have our own ideas, you know, whether it's we got to grow, we have to put in retail, we've got whatever it is, you know, we all have our own ideas. But really the science will drive and the facts will drive us to the right conclusion. So
yes.
I think this is a good first step. I think there's got to be other steps that follow because putting in, and I don't know what the figure is that we put in every year. Yeah, but it's a lot. It's a whole bunch, right. If you can't make an analysis of that, of how much it's grown your economy, that really and truly, you know, what was the point? So I would just encourage us to take the next step and make that determination. And once we make that determination of what businesses we should have in the city or which businesses we should encourage, then we'll know what will grow our tax base. And actually, it came from visiting Ms. Davis's district. There's no economy over there. There are lots of housetops and lots of beautiful, some beautiful buildings, Head Start buildings and recreation centers and so on and so forth. But there is no economy there. There is no grocery store. There's no barber shop. There's no dry cleaners. There's no economy there. And if there's no economy there, where are they going? There's some expendable income there. It's the same thing on Spring Valley and Coit is what this consultant showed us in the Spring Valley Coit study that I was mentioning to you, Madam Manager, at lunch. There is a lot in the case of Spring Valley and Coit, of pent-up money that is there, but it is going to Richardson and it's going to Plano because there is no economy right there on Spring Valley and Coit where they can actually spend their dollars. They're very marginal businesses. And so they take their money to Plano and they proved it out. They just simply proved it out with using some methodology. You know, I guess it's really financial methodology. So that would be my next step. Thank you, Judge Hill, for bringing this to us. That would be our next step, I guess, bring it to Mr. Allen's committee, but I think that would be the next step is really trying to determine why we don't have that economy in some areas and how do we grow that sector of businesses so that we can get a return on our money.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Ms. Davis?
I think it's a couple of things. Wealth, it's all about wealth. Given the opportunity, if given the opportunity in inner city neighborhoods
with the same amount of wealth, we could grow and we could have the type of businesses that is needed in said the southern sector. And we talk about, you know, how do we get there? Ms. Carroll, we talk about how do we get there? Well, we have to grow minority business. Individuals have to take a chance and open up more law firms, dentist office, retail, shoe stores, bookstores, drug stores. We got to grow our base. And the other thing is that people of color is not given that same opportunity to get a business loan. So we got a lot of factors in this wealth, and it's all about wealth. And you either have it or you don't have it. And the opportunity for us not to get it creates a problem because we can't get the same type of loan that perhaps somebody else can get to grow their wealth. And once people realize that we get a procurement, just here in procurement, if we get a procurement opportunity that's at a certain percentage, then we shouldn't get that type of procurement. It's all about wealth, I think, at the end of the day, for neighborhoods. And somehow, you're right, we're going to have to find out how do we grow wealth and opportunities in our neighborhood, because you know, and I know, once you grow opportunity, you grow wealth. Once you grow wealth, you become a millionaire. And at the end of the day, we have to decide, do we want people of color to have the same type of wealth? And that's my opinion.
Okay. All right, and that'll be short. Let me just say, one, I think we, to solve a problem, we have to know and identify the problem. The suburbs, we close our eyes and we let the suburbs grow right underneath our nose. When Cedar Hill put together their new shopping mall and we failed to address Southwest Center Mall, then it gave them the opportunity to take from us, and they don't mind taking away from us. Linda, as you spoke, as relate to the area where the people go in your area, as they were building, they would come in and they would build and share in with us, but then they would go out and build right around us to take from us. And everyone around us has grown. DeSoto, when I know that this is in your district, Tanel Beth Atkins, but they closed the Chili's on Camp Wisdom in the heart that was doing business on that corner of 67 at Camp Wisdom across from Southwest Center Mall, and they left the blank building and went elsewhere closer to the borderline of DeSoto and Duncanville, DeSoto and Dallas. All I'm saying is that they are very aggressively making aggressive moves against us, and they're not playing with us. And they're playing on their own behalf. So that'll take care of that. The fact that Arlington has had the World Series, the Cowboys, and Jerry had a big fight the other night, I mean, he does not care about keeping us and his foot on Dallas's throat, because he is committed, and Mayor Clark and him are committed to making sure that Arlington flies their banner. And Dallas has to jump up, and we have to say that, okay, well, we're going to compete now. Mayor, through your leadership, we're doing all of this, and we got our things going, but that is what has happened. So we have to realize that. And Ms. Davis, you made it a great point. Businesses cannot, and certain businesses cannot get the proper finance to be able to go in business. And so that's been a problem. And the bonding issue is one. Someone spoke about the construction. Well, even in the bonding, Mayor, we have to figure out how folks can get a bootstrap up and participate in things that are very, very difficult. Other than that, folks are going to continue to go other places,
seize other opportunities, and it's only going to hurt us now. Everybody that lives in Arlington and the folks that live in DeSoto, especially those folks in DeSoto, Duncanville, and all in around those areas, if they go to New York and they're asked, where are you from? They will say, I'm from Dallas. They're not going to say, I'm from DeSoto, I'm from Duncanville. Nobody would know nothing about that. But they claim this city. And we have to roll up our sleeves and become aggressive. Now, I'll close by this to say that all these problems are going to be fixed. So we go to page 9 and 10 real quick. All our problems will be fixed. Let's look at 10. Maybe so. But the bottom line is that whatever our tax base is, the good news is, and I'll close with this one, we're going to have $33 million to add to it. Through the beer and wine. Well, that's it. We're going to have $33 million to add to it. So the bottom line is, I want you all to know that $33 million is going to be added to this tax base through the beer and wine sales. It is going to be all right. So let's just take a look at that. I thought I'd close that out. We'll close it out with a part.
Mr. Mayor, I get to close because I opened the discussion, so I get to say the last word on this. Mr. Mayor, I compliment you for having the patience to allow this discussion. Because in case you didn't notice, this is a discussion that this council needs to have and wants to have. It is clear that around this horseshoe, we have different ideas on what it takes to grow this city. You, Ms. Coop, and some others think that the foundation is tax rate, private investment. Some of us, Mr. Carraway, thinks it's education. I think it's education. Ms. Davis thinks it's perception. Some folks think it's climate. That means that around this horseshoe, we have an awful lot of ideas and an awful lot of intellectual ability. And as Ms. Carraway said, we can solve it. Because all that green north needs to migrate. I want the green to stay north, and I want some of it to come south. But that means we have to use our intellectual ability and talk about it, Mr. Mayor. And I know we've taken up a lot of time. But that's what we're here to do, to fix what's wrong with this city. And Ms. Margolin, I disagree that we can't do anything. We can. We have the bully pulpit. We can make a difference. We can change this. And we change it by talking about it, by putting out our differences, putting our differences on the table, and resolving it. We have differences based on north, south, where we start from, what we do for a living. Mr. Allen and I have very different ideas about how to solve problems because he's a banker and I'm a lawyer. But the way we do it, while we have our 20 seconds in the sunlight, is to put the ideas out there and insist that we will come to a solution. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you. And I guess I get to close it out, actually. The one thing you said that I would disagree with strongly is this idea that it migrates north to south. Because my view is what we need to do is add to the city in total, not take it from one place and add it to another, so that it's a win in one case but a lose in another. But so what we ought to be doing is adding in total to our city, because I'd like to see the green get greener and those other areas get real green too. And that's what our focus ought to be. So it's not a migration. It's not take away from one area, but it's build up the other. The other piece that I would add is at some point, we've got to get the private side in here, and it's got to invest, because we just don't have enough money, nor does any public entity have it. We've got to get the private investment in. I'm going to close it down because we've got to go.
I have to respond. I really don't want to leave on the table that I think there's nothing that we can do. My comment was specifically about our lack of power over what is taxed for sales tax purposes. There's not a lot that we can do about that specifically. That doesn't mean that there isn't an awful lot we can do to grow this economy and to make this economy more equitable throughout the city. So I just didn't want to let that sit there. Thank you.
Yeah. And my only comment, the last part I was saying is, look across the country, across the world. You've never grown economies unless you had the private investment. It's the private investment that does it one way or another. You can't do it without it. It is now 2:27 p.m. on November 17th of 2010. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda. In addition to that, there will be a security briefing under Section 551.076 of the Texas Open Meeting Act. The items are the legal issues involving the downtown solicitation ordinance, gas utility docket number 10,000, legal issues involving the local option elections on sale of alcohol beverages, legal issues involving registered sex offenders, residential restrictions, and security briefings under Section 551.076. Anticipate it will be 45 minutes. Stay here. At 4:46, we're adjourned for lack of quorum.